Welcome into the Camastrick Podcast, episode number 155, presented by Hair Club, baby.
Hair Club for men, baby. What's up? And for women, actually.
Hair Club is for everybody.
It's for everybody.
It really is. Listen, I'm glad you brought that up because we can kind of start with that. A lot of women are getting involved with Hair Club.
Even my wife, who's got the thickest head of hair. She's got the most lovely. What's that once? Back in the day, is a cartoon where that girl has that long blonde hair, and then the dude, the knight, you know, like climbs up it or something.
Oh,
Rumspastel.
No.
Rumpastel.
Rapunzel.
Yeah.
Rapunzel.
So that's Kate. Okay. And then she looks in the mirror and she's like, "Oh, you got hair. I think I need some more hair here." I'm just telling you. When I went into Hans, there was half women, half men. So if you're a woman out there, which we have women listeners. That's for you too. Mm. It is for you too.
Can we give a shout out to Canada real quick because it's Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving to the Canadians.
Yeah, do they eat turkey or ham?
I think they do everything. They may even have like a tofurkey. Somebody has one. Somebody has a tofurkey, maybe field roast.
That'd be cool.
Hey, you should eat a field roast, dude. Field roasts are delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely delicious. Well, eat whatever you want.
No one's going to Andy's house for Thanksgiving. Let's be completely honest.
But real quick, y'all, but a hair club, over 1,200 locations in North America. Solutions for everybody, like thousands and thousands of different types of solutions. They've got hair products.
Yep.
You go to these facilities, Cam. Unbelievable. You can get your hair done. They cut your hair. They do everything you need done.
I like when they do the checkup and they just take a comb and they go through the back. And they're like, it's growing in here. This looks okay. And I'm like, they also have all kinds of where they take your blood, they infuse it.
Yes.
They take a syringe and then they put it in the top of your head. It's called PRP, platelet-rich plasma treatment.
Yeah, PRP.
It's just like you would if you had a shoulder.
Very common in a knee, shoulder, whatever.
Exactly right.
Yeah, it's a very common practice by medical people nowadays.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hardcore medical
PRP.
People. These guys are the best.
They spin the blood.
I know.
They spin the mug
in the top of your head.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah. They take your cells.
Yeah, the good stuff.
Yeah, and then they put it in there. Isn't that amazing?
It's unbelievable, dude.
Yeah. And it sounds like it would be painful, but in reality, it's not very painful.
Well, you could die. You just got to do what you got to do.
You want the hair in there.
You want that? It's like taking fertilizer and fucking putting on your head.
This isn't like it's not like a wig. It's not a toothpaste.
No.
This is like hair that grows out of your hair. It's amazing, amazing what they can do.
Real hair.
Hairclub.com. Check that out. Love having them on board. How was your weekend? Everything was good with you?
Yeah, weekend was good. I barbecued. I put on 13 pounds. I have to get my teeth cleaned tomorrow because I'm shooting a commercial.
Yes.
Okay. And my smile.
What time are you getting your? Because we got a photo shoot tomorrow.
Tomorrow, 10 o'clock in the morning.
That's when your doctor. Yeah,
that's
dental.
When I'm dental. Okay. I gotta get my teeth cleaned.
Yeah.
I posted a picture on Facebook the other day, and I looked at myself.
It looked terrible.
Oh, God Almighty, your teeth. You look like you're fucking some cowboy in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Kate, can you like fix that for me? She's like, no. I'm like, oh. I have to fix it myself.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get my teeth cleaned tomorrow.
Okay.
Got to do it, man. Well, I got to look somewhat pretty.
People go like twice a year, dude. Like, have you not been in a while? Or what's the story?
I just need to go. I just need to get them cleaned up, baby. Mm. I need to have my smile on point. Otherwise, you know, that's like the focus.
Okay. Did you get any pumpkins? Like, you have any pumpkins outside the house
yet? Yeah. I mean, we got the pumpkins. I got a gigantic one. I'm not going to carve it yet because it goes bad too
quick.
No, you can't carve it yet.
You got to wait till the day before Halloween.
But I got all kinds of shit going on. Mm-hmm. But then we put some bigger TVs up, so we had to take all the Halloween shit down, which was a pain in the ass because I got from the monster TV. TV's too small, and we're putting bigger ones up.
But why wouldn't you wait to put the Halloween stuff? If you knew you were putting new TVs up.
We didn't know when we get it scheduled because everything's fucked up.
Oh, so somebody came over to do all that.
Well, yeah, exactly. Let me explain something to all y'all, and all y'all in the business know. No one's working anymore, dude. Like, you try to hire somebody to do something, it takes fucking forever. Dude. There's restaurants don't have, they have three people working when it's fucking packed. It's fucking It's brutal.
Laurie and I had a date night Saturday night, went to one of the nicest restaurants in St. Louis. I mean, unbelievable restaurant. And I got to say, the service was not good.
Andy?
I don't want to call him out, but we were so nice to her because we're like, we're out.
Poor girl.
We don't have our kids. We were like laughing hysterically. It was like hilarious, and we just really got after it. Okay,
I mean,
we got after it, and the service was so bad. But it's like whatever. They forgot the appetizer. Like it was really bad.
Andy, here's what you do: if it's some poor girl who's just trying to grind it, we did the exact same thing the other day.
Yeah.
And Kate's mom and dad, and Kate's mom, she'll be loud, right?
Oh, will she?
She's the opposite.
So she'll let you know.
She'll let, and I'm like, oh, Jesus. Okay. And I'm like the opposite, right? So I'm like, no, don't worry about it. And I have to have a cocktail in front of me, okay?
Right
I
away.
I mean, I don't sit there without a cocktail. So right I'll get my away. Ass up, and yeah. I'll go to the bar and get a ton, whatever, bring it back down. You have to help the poor girl out. Listen, don't ever be fucking rude, unless they're rude to you.
No, no.
But if she's scrambling because they're fucking owners can't hire anybody.
I know.
That is not on her.
But they
or
weren't
him.
Very busy. I don't
okay,
know.
Okay, well, yeah, then I mean, Andy, I don't know. So, I'm just trying to stick up
so
for someone.
The good thing is, though, when they forget the appetizer, and you go to someone, and like the appetizers are like, they're not cheap either. And then all of a sudden you say, hey, you forgot the appetizer. When they brought the, they're like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, that's on me. I'm bringing it right now, and I'm taking it off the check.
They should.
I'm like, oh, all right, good. You know, bring it late and take it off the check. I'm
that's
okay
fine.
With that.
I'll eat that mug when I get home, baby.
No, we ate it.
Or whatever.
With our meal.
I mean, I'll take that thing to go and get home and crack a bottle of wine
so
and watch a scary
okay.
movie.
Listen, you get into all this like a pumpkin spice flavored
I don't
everything.
Pull that bullshit.
I don't do it either.
I don't do that. Do I look like some fucking... Look.
My wife does.
Now, your wife, I could see, too, that she has a hat on. She's got the gray boot or the brown boots that go all the way up to her knees.
The Uggs.
She's got the jeans tucked in. Yeah. She's she does that. Hey, Kate used to do that too. I don't know. I forgot
I don't
what she
know.
Wore
We're
last
not
year.
To that point of the season yet, so I don't know if she's busting that
you
out
get
this
my
year.
Drift,
or not.
Though,
oh yeah.
All
oh,
the Cougs. All the Cougs dress the same. You know.
Kinda. Yeah. Yeah.
They all dress.
My
the same.
Girl's got good style though. She does. You know. I don't know exactly. She just bought a pair of leather shorts. Actually, like leather.
That might be fucking sexy.
She hasn't put them on yet. Yeah. She hasn't put them on yet, leather, but I saw them laying there. Like, that's like a leather short, so that's like the new thing. But like people are just eating pumpkin, everything. Yeah. I hate pumpkin flavored anything.
Okay.
My kids last night, they made pumpkin cookies.
Yeah,
dude.
It looked nasty.
Pumpkin.
I'm just saying.
No, protein flavored.
Oh, Jesus, Andy. Like, that's hideous.
Like pumpkin cookies.
Oh, a piss out of my ass eating that fucking thing. Good God. Don't eat it, Andy. What is wrong? Those poor kids are like, they remind me of the Flanders, right? The Flanders kids that are like, this is imaginary Christmas. Mm. Like, they don't even get to eat good food.
All right, can I make a confession?
What?
So, Chloe had soccer, and now she feels really bad that she said this. She had two games this past weekend. And she feels like I'm putting too much pressure on her.
Well, you might be.
So, like, what does that mean? Like, I'm not even doing anything. I'm just like, you know, I just feel like you just have to.
Okay, well, wait.
You want your kids to succeed so bad.
She's a good kid.
And you know what their potential is, and you want them to reach their potential.
What are you doing? Okay, but here's how you evaluate. Mm-hmm. What is she lazy?
Not at all.
Not at all. Okay, so you check that mark
straight
off.
A's,
so check that mark off.
Yeah, yeah.
She does everything right. She gets up.
Oh,
she's
yeah.
on time for
oh,
shit
yeah.
for the most
oh,
part.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if she's saying there's probably too much on her, there might be too much on her. If she's like lazy, she doesn't get up, and she her grades, and she's like there's too much. Like, then you know you. Could...
She says she hears me yelling on the sidelines. I'm not a big yeller.
Oh, is that what she's talking
but
about?
But I'm talking to her. Yeah, she's like saying soccer specifically.
Oh, okay.
But if I feel like she's not in the right spot, position wise, whatever, I'm like letting her know, and I'm trying not to be that guy. I always said that I wouldn't be, and like soccer's not a sport that I truly know exactly where she's supposed to be anyway.
Because it doesn't really matter at that age. So just let her, if she's not running hard, then just say something. But if she's not in the right position, who gives a shit? Go get the fucking ball.
But the thing is, I try to explain to her, like, I'm so nervous during these games. I want her to do so well that it's like I'm so locked in that then all of a sudden I get too emotional.
Well, you need to fucking get it.
Okay?
You need to like chill out a little
bit. So I'm going to stop doing that.
She's doing everything right. She's a good kid. And if she says that she's overwhelmed by you fucking saying shit.
No,
then,
but then she said, no, it's fine or whatever. But then
well, now
she
you're confusing
said,
me.
No, but
okay?
she said I mean, it.
I'm trying to help.
Too much pressure. Well, because she didn't have a good game this past weekend. So she was like, okay.
Oh, she's probably just complaining. Yeah. Let her,
you put too much pressure on me. I hear you yelling on the sidelines.
I can't see
it's not really
you
my
yelling.
Style. I don't yell. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I can see some.
And my wife, here's the deal. She didn't grow up playing sports or from a sports family. So it's like completely foreign to her. Like, you know, the whole sports thing. It's just like everything's just about having fun and whatever. And just she doesn't know what's going on.
She doesn't know the competitive edge of it.
Does not know the competitive side of it. So, you know, to her and maybe her family, I'm like a little crazy, but, you know.
If they have eyes and ears, when they go to other places, they're going to see how psycho everybody else is.
That's
so
what I said. They see, like, the coach on the other team was, like, flipping out. The parents are going crazy.
I
never yell at the referee, and I would certainly never yell at another kid. I'm just like, it's my own kid. Like, if I feel like they're not putting forth the effort.
The worst people are is when you yell at another kid for not passing the ball
to your kid.
You're a fucking loser.
Even though you want to do it, but you just can't
do it.
Don't
do that.
You can't do that.
Your son's not passing the... Shut up.
I know.
How about your son goes
but,
and gets it?
But I will say this. It's an issue.
Yeah, I know. I can see that.
It's an issue.
I can see that.
I mean, sometimes that's just the reality of it.
Look, I'm talking about competitive stuff too, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's like, let them figure that out. That's not on you. That's a coach. That's the coach and the player. That's the kids and the kids talking mm-hmm. over. Like, give me the fucking ball. It's not the parents telling the fucking kid to get past to their own.
Did you watch that Maple Leafs documentary yet? Have you watched any of
that? Not yet.
You haven't watched any of it?
Not yet.
How much time
do you know what happened at the end.
Like, all the Maple Leaf fans are so mad when I said it was one of the best documentaries. I mean, I just felt like it really took you behind the scenes and gave you. I love the behind the scenes footage, man, whether it's football, hockey, whatever. I just like seeing it.
I've been watching Hard Knocks, but I haven't got to that yet, which I probably should. But on the other hand, I heard Sheldon Keefe looked pretty cool in it, man. I heard he was pretty cool in it.
I don't know. You know, gets worked up. Yeah. I don't know. Like, the general manager is interesting, you know.
Kyle? Is he like, hello, everyone? Kyle's here.
He's just very friendly and calm and...
Too much so?
I don't know. I wanted to get your read on that, so you didn't watch it.
My bad. I'm sorry. I was watching football. Look, there's so much other shit to watch. It's just like, what the fuck?
I know.
Like, there's football going. There's college football. I mean, not even into, but there's so much drama. Yeah, it's like crazy.
I know that. So I'm thinking about keeping this intro a little shorter because we have Tim Peel on this edition.
We have to.
And we went really long with Peelsy. And I don't want to force people to, like, listen to, like, a 3.5-hour podcast right? So Peelsy, like, this is, like, he's got an unbelievable story. You know, for a referee, he is a known name, right? In the hockey world, people know Tim Peel. Even prior to this latest, his last incident, you know, that ended his career, people knew who Tim Peel was even before that, right?
Absolutely, they did. And Tim was, look, Tim's the kind of guy, he's like that player's kind of ref, right? So you can talk that fucking Peelsy. Yeah. Hey, what up, Janner? I'm like, what's up, baby? He'd give you that extra, like, camp. Get your fucking elbows down.
Yeah.
You fucking took an extra stride. I go, oh, sorry, home. Sorry, homeboy. We're good, baby.
Then well, give me and let me say this, because some, you know, and we talk about this a little bit. He always had a lot of relationships with players, hung out with players and whatever. And sometimes that was frowned upon by some people in the industry. But the reality is, most players probably don't want to hang out with refs. He was like one referee where players we're okay hanging out with.
Refs,
you know what I mean?
I would see refs after games because there's not too many places to go to. Mm-hmm. And the refs would actually.
And they all go to the same spots.
The refs would come up to me during the games like, Janner. I go, fucking Harry's homeboy. I'll see you there. And then all the boys there, you buy him
on
drinks.
The ice, you're saying
on
that.
The fucking ice, I'm saying, it's fucking Harry's homie. I'll
well,
be there.
Well, you're not focused. You weren't focused on the game.
Well, I fight, but fight somebody. Like, let me do my thing. I'll meet you at Harry's. Like, don't give me an elbow pinning. I'll buy your drinks all night. We'll act like that you're a player too. You might get laid. I'm joking.
hey, but that video came out the other day of when you got hit by Brad Winchester.
Oh, Jesus,
dude,
fuck.
That was, I
oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
I couldn't stop laughing.
It's not funny.
It's not funny because you swallowed your tongue.
Andy, I might.
You had a concussion, but just watching it
might
over
lose you,
and over.
It might lose you money coming in like 5 or 6 years when I'm really fucked up from that damn thing and I can't even
that was
be
your
funny
only
anymore.
Concussion?
Well, probably
like,
not.
I feel like you're going, hold on, you're going to hit Hartnell. And he's coming down the wall, and like,
doing?
I don't know. And then he fought Hartnell. Like, what is going on?
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
And I love Brad Winchester, by the way. Great guy.
Such a good dude. Yeah. And Carlo's so fucking funny. Carlo had to put that fucking post up.
Because he scored the game winner.
And he goes, it's for you. No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't, that's Carlo. No, hilarious. It was. They were all worried about me, man. They never see me like that. I never got rocked like that ever. But that's every time. My wife's family, who it was my girlfriend at the time, but her family came to the first game. Was that?
Yeah.
And then their second game, I
fought
Barch.
Oh, really?
That was their
first time
game.
Ever. Yeah. That was like early in the game, too, right?
Yeah, dude. It was the first game of the year against Philly. Home opener.
Oh, my God.
Oh, God.
How long were you out for?
I was out for 2 seconds.
I don't know what.
What the
how
fuck
did he
was
not
winning?
See you coming?
Andy, what the fuck was he doing?
I don't know.
I'll tell you, as a hitter, you know I'm the first one there. You know that's my hit there, dude. You could take the wall away, but maybe even cut to the middle and take that pass away, you fuck. Like, that's my hit, dude. I don't know.
And then he's
Winnie,
fighting. Like, he's fighting.
He didn't even throw a punch. Winnie, you know, like, I'm not, like, steering that guy in for you. Like, I'm hitting him myself. Yeah. He's got nowhere to go. That's my hit. And he fucked me up, dude. Ay, ay, ay.
All right, any thoughts on the season coming up? Do you have any? Are you excited for things to get going?
Yeah, of course.
TNT, ESPN, all of that. Is that any interest there for you? Like, or no?
I mean, just make me laugh and entertain me.
Yeah, entertain me. Entertain me.
Look, I'm a simple kind of cat, dude. Like, mm-hmm. I'm pretty easy going. Just fucking entertain me. I want Biz and Wayne to be funny together. I want Tockett to be tell old school stories. I want them to get kind of flustered a little bit too. Yeah. TNT producers are like, what did he say? Oh God, cut it. Like, I want something kind of cool like that, but it has to come organically, right. You know.
Yeah.
As far as the games, dude, yeah, let's go, baby. Travel. Everybody's traveling everywhere now. Everything's good to go. It's not some fucking playing the same stupid fuck teams. Mm-hmm. At 9:30 at night, speaking of the Blues, playing Anaheim every fucking day, where it's like, what do you care about 9:30 start times? What do you mean, what do I care? I'm fucking done. I'm done by 9:30.
You're like, I'm not staying up to watch this.
Then I got to get up and watch the whole game over at 5 o'clock in the morning.
I can watch at 9:30. I can stay up and watch.
I can't, homie. Oh, I got to fix a couple things, but
I can stay up and watch.
Kate and I are done.
James Neal gets a contract here in St. Louis. I throw that out there, man. Cool, like shit. You know, so yeah, and he got a deal. He's still getting paid like 1.9
from
Edmonton. Yeah, so he's doing okay. He's doing okay. Yeah. So
you don't have home change.
We'll have more to come on what's going on currently in the NHL, obviously as we move along. But again, long interview with Tim Peel, so we want to get to that. New sponsor alert: MyBookie. We are now in the betting game, Cam. I mean, are you familiar with this? Do you know how to bet? Because people are listening to you now.
Well, yeah, they sponsor my radio show too, man. MyBookie.ag, baby. And now they want to get into hockey. A lot of people watch football, and especially football, and they might not even like the sport, but they certainly like gambling on it, man.
Yeah.
It creates attention. It creates eyes. And I tell you what, guys, man, we're going to get some, you know, locks of the week and shit like that.
Yes.
We're going to have all kinds of information for you guys. We're going to bet too, by the way, which, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt with us.
Like, what do you think about betting on hockey? Like,
it's hard, man.
What do you look at there?
Well, here's what I look at. I'll give you one thing.
Mm-hmm.
If the daddy's on a trip, yeah, fucking
If it's a dad's trip,
if it's a fucking trip, that's the one big advice I'm going to get you. But you know what? This is a learning experience for Andy and I too, man.
Yeah, man.
We want to get you guys into it because Andy and I are going to get into it, and it's going to make you want to watch hockey that much more.
Oh yeah,
and you don't have to overdo it.
No,
you don't have
to bet responsibly.
And you parlay the mug, dude.
Yes, you do.
Parlay those mugs,
so you can do a 2, 3, 4, 5 game or whatever.
Yes, and you can spend little money and be able to win in the end a lot of money.
Have you ever been a big gambler?
Not at all.
With any other sports?
I was an addict for a while, so I couldn't do the gambling and be an addict at the same time. Yeah. Two addicts at once, so I you know.
Well, you're in control now. You're in control. Well,
yeah.
I don't worry about you now.
No, but I'm just saying, I never got into it, but of course, look, guys, man, I if you know what you're doing and you could do it responsibly, just have fun with it. It really is it's a lot of fun to be into the games that much.
Well, basically, so the NHL is back, and so is the lock of the season with MyBookie. Again, MyBookie.ag, check it out. And go to our social media, our Instagram, our Twitter. We'll have that promo code for you. We want you to use our promo code. Play along with us and be part of like our team here with our gambling here with MyBookie, because now it's gotten into the hockey, man.
Dude,
it's huge.
It's
going to
blow up, guys. Get on it now.
Yeah, so here we go. The lock of the season at MyBookie. When either team scores, Cam, in the NHL season opener, you win. It's simple. All you got to do is go to MyBookie, like I said, select the lock of the season between Vegas and Seattle. When the lamp lights red, then you get the bread, right? So last season, the Golden Knights, top three in goals per game. A little stats for you. Do you have any other stats to throw out about this game?
Andy, you're the stat guy, damn it.
Seattle's loaded with speed. You know, they're going to find the puck and be able to score some goals early and often as well in this high-octane matchup. Although, I don't know how good Vegas is going to be this year. I just feel like at some point, you can't be great every year. They'll still be good, but you can't be great every year.
They're going to be.
When are they going to fall off?
Vegas is going to be entertaining. That's all that matters.
All right, you won't find a better bet on opening night. So get to MyBookie right now. Start your NHL season off with a win. Don't miss out on a winning season. Head to MyBookie.ag. And again, we'll have that promo code for you on our social media.
Check that out.
Twitter, Instagram. Use our social media.
Follow us.
I'm going with Vegas for sure in this lock of the week. It's not even close. I don't think Seattle's going to be very good.
They're going to be very good either, man. They don't have that many big scoring punch.
They've got They've got like Grubauer and goal, but again, he doesn't have the Avalanche in front of them. They've got some other guys.
And Vegas is like, fuck everything. Let's go. Now, Robin Lehner, let's see where he's at. Let's see where some of these guys are.
I know. But they've got
they're
a good
loaded.
Team.
They're loaded,
man. I mean, I know Seattle's got Schwartzy and some of these other guys, whatever. Jordan Eberle. Like,
they've got
some players. They've got Giordano on the back end. They've got some experienced players, but they're not beating Vegas in their first game in history for the Seattle Kraken. But best of luck to Seattle, but I'm taking Vegas here.
I agree with
for
you.
For my lock.
That. I agree with
so
you.
So get there, go to mybookie.ag, play along with us all season long. Here with the Cam and Strick podcast. As always, the Cam and Strick podcast is brought to you by CarShield and CarShield.com, baby.
Oh, CarShield. God, remember that time my starter didn't work? And everybody's like, oh, Cam, your truck didn't work. I'm like, oh, fuck. I look like a jackass. But then I called up. I'm like, oh, yeah, I got CarShield. I called up my buddy like a half a mile down the road. They're like, I'll pick that bad boy up. So they hooked it up. All you could pick out whoever you want to work on your car. They'll come and get that bad boy, take it there, drop it back off. Easy peasy. A little embarrassing off the bat. Anytime you have car trouble, I don't give a damn who you are. It's embarrassing. Everybody's looking at you on the side of the road. But it's so simple to have CarShield. And, of course, put the promo code in Cam, C-A-M, and they'll hook you right up.
You're going to save 10%, baby. You never know when something's going to go down. Make sure you're protected and do it the right way. CarShield and CarShield.com, man. 800-857-2481. How about Bellman and Bellman.com? Man. Here's a few things for you real quick. Okay, fall and winter driving around the corner.
Yes.
Is your vehicle ready for it?
Mine better be, because I live out in the middle of the wealthy part of Franklin County, but it's hilly out there. It's hilly out there, Andy. And if I get into a jam, I need to know I got my truck fucking going, baby. And I want to get that SUV. I want to have that four-wheel drive.
Well, this is what you need to know. Bellman's two service centers in Troy, Missouri. They got the Buick GMC on one side. The other side, the Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.
Yeah.
And you find all that over there in Troy, Missouri. But here's what you need to know. Their two service centers feature the latest tech and factory-trained technicians. These guys know what's up.
They know what's up, dude. And it makes you feel good, right?
Yep.
When you walk in there, you see a bunch of cats. They're like, yeah, these guys know what they're doing. They certainly know what's up at Bellman.
And they do everything. Schedule maintenance, major repairs, new tires, paint and collision repair. Honestly, they do everything. And you can consider a brand new vehicle, we know that, or one of Bellman's top pre-owned vehicles, quality pre-owned vehicles. And again, they want to buy your used car right now. Don't be worried about what kind of condition it's in. They want to buy your used car. They want to buy it today. Everybody qualifies. The credit checks today. I don't worry about your credit.
Yeah.
Everybody qualifies at Bellman. And that's how nice of a guy.
Well, that's a nice feeling.
I got to give a shout out. Kenny Bellman. I took Ty to the game, last preseason game. We had a great time, man. Like, went around, saw a bunch of people, whatever. And we're sitting behind the Blues bench, and all of a sudden this guy comes out to me, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, maybe. It's Dan Bellman's son, Kenny Bellman. Give him a shout dog. Out.
What's up, baby? thank you for Andy. Andy needs that. I want everybody to go up and get autographs with Andy every time he goes to the game. It's good for the brand. Kenny, the man, homeboy.
Yep. Well, and their credit specialists, like I said, they treat you like family, customize a finance plan to get you into the perfect vehicle for your needs and budget. Bellman.com, Bellmann.com. So check that out. All right, Daredevil Hockey. Again, I don't know what else we need to say to people. People are starting to listen, and they don't need kid being traumatized, getting cut open, potentially losing a good portion, if not all of the season, because they're cut by a skate, and they're in the emergency room, and now little Johnny or Susie, like, I don't want to play hockey anymore.
Yeah. I'm scared. I saw that blood. I don't like it. Well, no shit, you don't. You got fucking cut open in the fucking right in the arm.
Yeah.
So yeah, Daredevil, it doesn't weigh anything. It just helps you out, and it just solidifies your mind too, especially as a parent where you know that.
Yes. Peace of mind, man.
Peace of mind. Yeah. It's a little peace of mind. Like, if they get stepped on, the kids are fucking dumb.
Yeah.
Okay. They'll step on you and shit. Yes. With these weird collisions. You don't want to get cut.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Use that promo code Cam and Strick, all caps, baby. You're going to save 25%. That's good savings. Again, they ship U.S., Canada, a bunch of CHL professional players, NHL players are now using Daredevil Hockey. I see kids now. Now, putting on the Daredevil in the local rinks, man. I love seeing that. So, again, Daredevil Hockey, be sure to support our sponsors. Again, use that promo code Cam and Strick, all caps, and you're going to save some money. Be a local legend. At Be a Local Legend on Instagram, BeALocalLegend.com. Cam, what's a local legend?
Well, I mean,
met one?
I like to think I am. First one ever, shit kicker. Did pretty good downtown scene.
What does that mean?
A radio
show. I know. What does that mean?
I wheeled at Harry's. I mean, hanging out with the refs and shit, you know. I even got them laid.
And that works for you? The refs kind of bring the ladies over for you.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Okay.
Like, refs, go get them ladies for me, will you?
No, referees Timmy Peel, he's a local legend too, man.
Oh, yeah,
everyone knows Peelsy.
I love it.
He finds his way around town, man. Shit. We love that. He's got a beautiful wife too, T-shirt, great family.
Cute family.
Now he's coaching. Lord. Hey, use that promo code STRICK.
That's cool.
Tell the people. What is it?
It's STRICK.
STRICK. Use that promo code. You're going to save some money. www.bealocallegend.com. Again, at Be a Local Legend on Instagram. They've got unbelievable clothing. The Local Legend apparel line is sick. They've got all different types of glasses, wine glasses, rock glasses, beer glasses. I've got the beer glasses. You've got the wine glasses.
Yeah, man, I drank some wine.
It's got the Local Legend on there.
God, I drink a lot of wine.
Ryan Weber, flat out getting it done, man, supporting the pod, out of Cincinnati, former hockey player. Again, listen, support the Local Legend in you, and just like Hair Club, man, the ladies are getting involved. The Lady Legends.
Lady Legends. A lot of those, too.
Yeah,
Jesse Dunn comes to mind when it comes to hockey.
Well, there's a lot of Lady Legends. Yeah. I mean, Cammy Granato's a Lady Legend.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of St. Louis.
Yeah, Jackie Joyner Kersee.
Oh, badass.
She is a local legend. Right. Simone Biles. She loves Emo's Pizza. I mean, listen.
Oh, she's fucking lying.
You think she is?
Emo's Pizza. So, no. Wait.
Hold on. She goes on a national television show, like the Jimmy Kimmel Show.
Yeah.
Because she's talking about Emo's, and his wife is from St. Louis, so he has an Emo's Pizza sent there.
It's dog shit.
No, listen. It's okay. It's good. It's really good.
Go live in Jersey.
I understand. It's not the same. Not in the same category.
Hey, all y'all Jersey folk. You know what I'm still letting eat Emo. Pizza's dog shit.
No, it's good. But listen, so he brings the pizza out, and he starts eating it, and she wouldn't eat it. She's like, no, I have a show tomorrow night.
Oh, yeah. She's like you, man. Like, she doesn't probably eat pizza.
Dude, they're like these little thin little pieces.
Yeah, they suck. What? It's crackers, dude. Fuck it.
What if they're a sponsor? It might be a sponsor.
Well, I'll change my mind.
All right. So, be a local legend. Emo is a local legend here in town, too. I'm just saying.
Whatever.
Okay. My custom sports chairs, Cam. These things are cool. They're on their way. I'm surprising you with a chair. I'm surprising a lot of people with chairs, actually. Brody. Everyone's getting a chair, man. My custom sports chairs, these things are unbelievable. Use that promo code CAMANDSTRICK20. Right, Brody? Is that what it is? CAMANDSTRICK20. You're going to save a bunch of money. These are 100% Canadian made. Pick your favorite hockey team, and then you can put your name and number on the back of it if you want, or you can pick like a legend and put that on the back and put the name and the number and whatever you need. But my custom sports chairs, man, out of Canada, these people are bad.
Yeah,
they have NFL teams and NBA teams. Musicians like famous, like historically famous, like bands and rock groups and stuff like that.
Pink Floyd.
You can personalize it with your own business. These Adirondack chairs they survive any weather condition, rain, snow, doesn't matter. You have to bring it in for the winter. They survive anything. They fold up. They're easy to put together. Finished, absolutely beautiful. And we love having these guys on board, man, all these Canadian companies. But my custom sports chairs, again, check these out. We put them out on our Instagram. You can follow them on Instagram as well. And look at all the different chairs that they have. And again, you can customize it with your favorite player name and number on the back. And maybe your son or daughter, could be whatever. My custom sports chair. Use that promo code CAMANDSTRICK20. You're going to save some serious money, no shipping and all that other type of stuff. So again, check that out, my custom sports chair. Love all our sponsors, including our title sponsor, Hair Club, baby. Check them out, hairclub.com. All right, Timmy Peel probably doesn't need Hair Club. Probably doesn't need it.
No, he's got good hair.
He's got good hair.
Well, maybe
he has great hair. But hey, even if you have good hair, man, you probably could still use a little boost from Hair Club.
Well, if you're used to getting good hair,
hairclub.com.
Keep that good
hair. In all seriousness, a very engaging interview. A lot of laughing, but again, some serious tone to it as well from our good buddy Timmy Peel, who dropped by the CAMANDSTRICK studio. So enjoy this one. Tim Peel on the CAMANDSTRICK podcast, presented by Hair Club, baby. The CAMANDSTRICK podcast is brought to you by CarShield. You know, nothing more frustrating, Cam, than when that engine light comes on and you know right off the bat you're going to have to spend thousands of dollars to repair your vehicle. Call 800-857-2481. Mention the promo code CAM or visit carshield.com and use the code CAM to save 10%. Yeah. That's carshield.com. A deductible may apply. Save yourself money. Cam. Sign up and get your coverage now with carshield.com.
Cam.
Now up to the interview. Hey, can we turn the heat up? Just turn the heat up a little bit.
Man, I don't even want to be around people after I sweat. Seriously, it's gross.
Tell you what Cam did on the way down here?
What?
My kids are scared of him.
He lives out in the country.
No, they're not.
They are so scared of him.
Now they are, but they weren't before today.
They weren't before. Yeah. He calls me and he's like, dude, I'm in the traffic. I'm going to be like an hour late. I'm like, fuck. I'm like, call Peelsy. I'm not calling him. You call him. Call him. And he's like, shut the fuck up. My kids are in the car.
No idea they're in the car. You got it. No. Wait.
And so I had to hang up the phone because they're like, oh my God, why is Cam yelling?
Uncle Cam.
Why is he yelling at you? And then he texts me. He's like, dude, I'm just joking. I'm here. I'm like, fuck.
Tell me the kids are in the car. You have to acknowledge that right off the bat.
Normally, I do.
Well, that's a rookie mistake on your part. Yeah. Now the kids are scared of me.
You still would have thrown out the F-bombs.
No, I wouldn't have. No. When he says the kids are in the car, I'm on radio every goddamn day.
I tell him my kids are in the car, and he's still like...
No, I don't.
And then you just let it go. You're like, okay.
Then don't answer the phone.
Then I didn't when he called back three times. Made him feel bad.
Peelsy, what's going on, baby?
Not much, boys. Just I should have retired years ago. I'm loving this.
I know.
I used that line the other day, and Walt goes, yeah, you should have.
You set yourself up for that one. I did. That's one of those witty ass. I know, man. Are you enjoying yourself though? Like, you chilling?
My
like,
God.
Your so body feel good and shit.
I've had a bunch of people ask me the last month since training camp and preseason and all that if I've missed it, and I can honestly say I don't miss it at all.
Really?
Like Bronson's nine. Jamal and I, Jammer's the head coach.
He's your boss. Let's be honest.
He's my boss.
He is your boss.
He runs that show.
He runs the show.
Yeah, he does. Dude, he's intimidating when he coaches. Like, he's intense.
Do you remember him being like that?
Cam, if
like
I mess
if you
up
look a, in your eye and he's
yeah,
like,
no, if I mess up a drill, he looks at me like, what the? And I go, dude, there's a reason I was a referee. I was not a very good hockey player. Okay. You played in the NHL for 15 years and won a Stanley Cup.
High expectations.
So I'm
the puck. You gotta do it though.
I'm the puck pusher. I push the pucks at practice.
I do.
He runs the practice, but we got a good little Central States team. Yeah. So we're in Chicago this weekend, and the last 2 years, Bronson's a good little player, and it's a cool name, eh, Cam?
I like that. Yeah.
Like after Charles Bronson.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Yeah.
And I was watching the games on Live Burn. I'd be in Vegas or LA or Columbus or wherever.
You're just missing
and
it.
I'm watching it and I'm going, dude, this little boy needs his dad home, right?
Yeah, dude.
And so it's awesome. I love it. And Brielle's a good little horseback rider. You see my pictures on Instagram and Twitter.
I saw that.
She's a stud. She's awesome.
Does coaching Bronson pay as well as being an NHL ref? Does it pay the same?
Not even close.
Jammer hooks him
What's
up, I
Jammer
sure.
paying you? Jammer's taking 25% of whatever you make.
Oh, no question.
Picking up the tab.
No question about that. Well, I'm surprised a little bit, like, only because it's been your routine for so long, and
it
like
was.
And I know, like, you're ready, because even like Walt, talking about Walt, like, I remember when he got his teeth knocked out. And he was, were you on the Blues at the time?
Yes.
Yeah, so Oshie hit him in the face, and he was coming on all the youth hockey trips, like,
I
when I was coaching, and he's like, don't say anything about me being here, whatever. But he loved it. And I was like,
I know.
Sometimes these guys, maybe they just don't want to go back to their old life once they get a taste of real life with their kids and everything.
So you'll love this. We're in Chicago 2 weeks ago, and all the parents get in the lobby, and, we're drinking and telling stories. And I'm holding court and telling stories. And some of them are true, and some of them are embellished, right?
Yeah, okay. But
So I'm into the red wine pretty good. And Tisha goes up to bed, and it was 10:39, and my phone, I get a text message, and it's from her, and she goes, okay, babe. She goes, you've told enough stories. She goes, it's time to come up to bed. She goes, you're already a little tipsy. We got an early game tomorrow. And I'm like, well, I show all the parents the text. I go, well, I just got the hook. I go, I've been told to go to bed.
Good boy. Right? You're a good boy. When she says to go up to bed, you're like, oh, this is like overtime.
Yeah. Well, she's heard all the stories anyway.
It's
like,
overtime.
100 times.
She's heard you tell her and other people.
Her ears are bleeding.
But you talk about Walt, and that I got a quick story about when that puck went off his face.
Were you officiating that game?
No, but Derek Amell, he was at my retirement party.
Yeah.
The retirement party you came to, and he tried to one-up me because I had this beautiful, beautiful wine-colored blazer on.
Strick
showed up with the exact same blazer on. Yeah, he did.
He's a copycat motherfucker, is what he is.
But I looked way better in it, Cam, than he did.
I didn't know you were wearing it that night. I had no idea.
He's cut up still, dude.
So Derek Amell that flew in from, Derek was a linesman for 20-plus years. And one of the best in the league, and Walt loved him and still does. And Derek tells the story when Derek was working that game, and when that puck went off of his mouth, Derek went right to him in front of the net because he scored the goal.
Yeah,
right?
It went off his face.
Went
and
off
scored.
His face and in the net. And Derek goes, I go, Walt, how are you? And he goes, this is all you could hear was, He was in so much pain. And you know how tough Walt is, right? And it was like he couldn't even say anything. Like, oh, my God. But you know what? When Walt lost his teeth, it made him look 10 years older.
Oh, God, it was so funny. Hey, I know. I mean, after a while, you look at him, you're like, oh, God, you look terrible. And we chirped him
He kept his teeth out for how long? I mean, yes. I don't think he put his teeth out. I don't think he got teeth.
At the bar.
For at least a year or so.
Chantel, she's
that's
a
gotta
saint.
Hurt, that's got to hurt. Yeah, that's got to hurt. But, you know.
Oh, but no, I'm loving it, boys. It's nice. It's nice. I've been playing a lot of golf with Panger. I tweeted out the other day a picture of him and I. I said, I'm his human ATM machine. That little guy. First of all, we all love Panger, right?
Of course.
He's the funnest guy to ever play golf with. Like, the
why?
Best.
Why? Because he's so good, so he doesn't take
it. He's so good, but he's. You know, is
oh, his nonstop energy.
Guy, I don't know if the guy ever has a bad day. No. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And we laugh and have so much fun out there. But I did take him for $100 on.
You did,
yeah, on Thursday.
Are you like Jordan with that? Isn't he? Where he'll collect that money.
Oh yeah. No, we're paying up. Like there's no.
See,
like,
Andy, you're not ready yet, homeboy.
Well, either are you. I mean, let's just be honest here.
But I can entertain people still, and I can bring him out to my club.
I'm actually fun to. I'm actually fun to take off.
So.
Well, I don't have to golf every hole. I'm there for the social part.
So, Cam, you guys were playing in a charity thing this summer, and I forget where it was. It might have been, yeah, it was Kylie Hill. Did he play with you, Strick?
Yes, he did.
Yeah. And so I ran into Hiller at the rink, we're talking, and he's like, yeah, I played with Strick today. And he goes, oh, my God. He goes, he literally could have shot 200. He goes,
not good.
No.
It was 36.
That's not Mario Lemieux
it was
in
like,
fucking
89. What's 36 plus 18? Yeah, it was like 54 holes. I think 54.
You better be cracking jokes, homie.
So he's telling me how bad Strick was. So I call Strick. I go, the rumor is in St. Louis, your golf game is atrocious. He goes, would you shut the... He goes, you're like the fifth person today that's reached out to me. Oh, he was mad.
People denounce you when you're not good at golf.
But it was a scramble. So, like, one of the guys we were playing with, who I think may have...
No, but they
shot a hole in one with you.
Kircher.
Yeah, so like, dude, we were hitting his ball every time. So I'm just trying to hit it as hard as I can.
But they told me
I'm sure it went far.
They told me you teed up on the first hole, not even between the blocks. You were on the other side of the blocks, and you teed up with an iron or something. You didn't even try to hit your driver.
You don't even know what you're doing. Listen,
no, that is not true.
You don't even know the
now, that may be false.
It's fucking embarrassing.
That may be false.
Yeah, actually, the brand is, like, hurting.
It is hurting the brand.
It does. And I'm not good either, so don't get me wrong. But, like, I'm better than you. I need you to
If it wasn't raining outside, we should have done this interview on the golf course.
We need to balance this shit out a little bit, dude. I'm getting lessons, by the way.
Hey, so officiating, like, how did you decide? Like last year, everyone knew it was going to be your last year anyway.
Yeah.
Like, how many years did you say, okay, this is going to be my last year? Or did you know
so
that was going to be the end?
5 years ago, they signed me to a 4-year deal. So I was supposed to, the ironic thing about, you know, what obviously we'll get to it at some point today was what went down with me. The ironic thing was I was supposed to retire in the 2019-2020 season.
Okay.
So I wasn't even supposed to be working last year. And 2019-2020 is when Jonathan Toews fell on my ankle and broke my fibula in Arizona.
I remember seeing you wheel around, man.
And I don't want to say anything, Cam, but I stood up and skated off the ice.
Did.
Yeah, I was
not
like
after you got hit
I was
the
like
penis, so, but
yeah, I was like Joe Theismann. I was like Theismann. I got up and I skated off.
Theismann did not look good at that fucking particular moment, let's be honest.
I remember Troy Murray, he does the radio for the Blackhawks cuz they obviously they were playing and he called me a couple days later, goes, I heard you broke your fibula. He goes, dude, you stood up and skated off. But honestly, I thought it was, I thought I had a high ankle sprain. So I'm hobbling out of the Arizona rink. I'm on my crutches and JT. I always call him JT. Everyone calls him Taser, but I call him JT and I love him. And he's walking with DeBrinket and they're following me down the ramp. And he goes, Pilsy, what happened? I go, you broke my leg. Oh, like God. He didn't even know. So anyway, I battle back. I'm like rehab, and I'm trying to get back because I don't want my last year to end like this. Well, Walken calls in December. He's like, hey, want you to come back. Will you come back for another year and work with the young refs? And I'm like, yeah, sure. But anyway, going back to Tees, I come back March the 1st. I worked three games before COVID and ended everything. And my third game was in Detroit, and Chicago's there. And I haven't seen Tays since he broke my leg. So Kane's coming up, and Keith and Larkin, and they're all, Pilsy, how you doing? Good to see you back. And, you know, make you feel good. And Tays never says a word to me. Not one word. He's the guy that broke my leg. I'm like, what the frig? Like, so I fly home.
Watch that language.
Yeah, I know. So I fly home, and I go to Tisha. I go, I can't believe Jonathan Tays didn't even, like, say, hey, good to see you back. How's your leg? Blah, blah, blah. So summer rolls around. Doorbell rings. Walk out. There's this big box there. Big box. Open it up. It's a present from Jonathan Tays. Beautiful Blackhawk jersey signed.
Oh.
Beautiful card. Because he's pretty, you know, you guys, he's pretty,
yeah,
pretty intense guy.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of battles on the ice. But, of course, I respected him, and I hope that he did. And yeah, sure enough, he writes this note. I know it was tough. I was tough to referee, but I had a great amount of respect for you. And he gives me a gift card to Gibson's in Chicago, the steak place. And there's a case of wine, and it's from Pavel Bure's. Or Valerie.
Valerie Burris. Oh, winery. Jesus Christ. Now this is getting a little extreme. Yeah, seriously. He gave you wine,
he
too?
He gave me three bottles of wine. So, of course, I have to Google it to see how much, you know, the wine's worth. And it's like worth $300 a bottle.
Oh,
and,
lower.
And so I text Quenville right away, you know, and you guys know Q. He's the best. And Q calls me right. He calls me. He doesn't even text back. He goes, not surprised. He goes, that's the type of guy he is.
Yeah.
So, good, Jonathan.
So
you crushed those in like 2 weeks, bro.
Oh, I still got
So them. You were thinking, like, what? He breaks my leg. Doesn't even come up and say hello. Doesn't even acknowledge me. I'm back.
Yeah.
Which even though he sent you the package, I thought maybe he could have skated up and been like, hey, did you get the package?
Maybe whack you on the leg where he broke it.
Or welcome back. Yeah.
But you know what? He's so intense that I don't even, like, he's so focused.
He doesn't
on the
put
ice.
It together.
No.
So is he, of all the superstars, like, was he hard to deal with? Like, are there other guys that are just, like, difficult to deal with?
He was tough to deal with. I don't, you know what? I got along with the players. Yeah. Like, maybe sometimes too much to a fault. Like, mm-hmm. The league sometimes didn't like it because I, especially in the era that when I moved here in 2000, it's when Walt played here and Dallas Drake and Dougie Wade.
You could talk to him.
Chopper and those guys. And
Matt Walker, Dennis Weidman. I used to hang with those guys too.
RJ Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what a wheel he is.
Fucking wheel.
Yeah, and so we'd play golf in the summertime, and, you know, we just had a lot of fun together because we were the same age.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a detriment sometimes to my career because I don't think that the league liked how close I was to some of the Blues players, but it never influenced how I worked a game.
You think that's unusual? Like, a lot of referees, they're in NHL cities in terms of where they're based. Are people not, like, human and, like, hanging out with other people that are in their industry?
I know some of them do, for sure. Yeah. Mine was maybe just a little bit more high profile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can still hang out and still give them a fucking penalty.
But you think that's a nature of St. Louis, small town, more than anything?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Like, the reason I became friends with them is because I moved here,
yeah,
and I didn't know anybody, and Chaser took me under his wing.
Yeah.
And I remember I moved here, and it was in 2000, and it was a month before 9/11. And the reason I bring that up is because, you know, I'd never lived in the U.S. And so all of a sudden 9/11 hits and I'm like, man, this country is really patriotic.
Oh,
I remember,
God.
I remember I was living in Ellisville and there were flags everywhere. And it was just like, it gives you chills even thinking about it. But Chaser put me under his wing and introduced me, obviously, to the alumni. So I became a part of that group. And then, you know, the current players are hanging around And so you're right. It's got a lot to do with St. Louis and being a small town. And you know, I always tell people that here you got Walt. He's probably got 70 million, 80 million in the bank, whatever he's got, whatever Chantel takes care of the money. And he could live anywhere. He could, you know, we know how much he loves Massachusetts and Boston. But they just built another house, you know, a couple of years ago over here. Like, they love it here. The people just love it here. It's the best thing I ever did was move
to
St.
Louis. Well,
they're
good to you here, man.
They're good to you.
Like, people are nice here. Everybody knows you still. You're still in somewhat of a bubble, but it's a good kind of bubble. No one could, even if you were controversial when you played in a bit, where the fans didn't like it, maybe you're overpaid, and they just fucking bash you. If you retire here,
they still like you.
They'll still, and you hang out, and you're like, hi, they fucking love you. Yeah. They don't give a fuck anymore. Yeah. So it's cool. It's not like Toronto.
How'd you meet your wife then? Because she's a St. Louis girl, right?
She's from Illinois, yeah, but she lived here. I chased her down for like 2 years, yeah.
Abby LePew style?
Yeah, kind of like.
You're like, I'm number 20.
Get over here. You
I
know,
have orange sleeves. So come to the game tonight. I'm leaving you tickets.
I'm the one guy.
She's like, oh, I thought you were Steiner. You said number 20. You know, I'm like the referee.
I gave him a penalty, though.
So the guys would laugh because I was single, and so, you know, I was having a lot of fun in St. Louis, and I'd had these business cards made up, said National Hockey League referee, right? My cell phone, I'd give them out at the bars and that. And so just a loser, right?
Oh, God.
So I give it to Tisha like every time I'd see her, and she was 29 and I was 40, right? She's 11 years younger than me.
Oh,
and
dang.
Yeah, what? She's like, She didn't want to have anything to do with me, and she'd see me down at Pepper Lounge, and we're rolling with the bottle service.
That's old school, yeah.
You know, and she'd see my act and my game, and she knew what I was like, and and finally, I just wore her down. I think she finally was like, okay, I'll finally go out with this guy. And
then like a good defense, yeah, you just kind of fucking, yeah, you gotta wear him down.
Then she realized I was a good guy, and
so living in St. Louis, like, you know the league, like they. And like you said, like, they're kind of like, okay, you got friends and whatever. Was it uncomfortable for you to officiate here in St. Louis? Did you not like
it? I knew he was going to bring that up today, Cam. You know why?
He's going to bring up all kinds of shit.
Because he's the one that started the drip years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Pilsy calls more penalties against the Blues because he lives here. And doesn't
I
wanna,
never
he
said does, that.
Yeah, you did.
You know
yeah,
I did.
Yeah,
we
did.
Looked that up. Is
yeah,
that accurate?
No, because yeah, I think it was opposite. I think you didn't call. I don't think you did call a lot of penalties.
Well, the rumor I heard was Strick said Pielsey calls more penalties because he doesn't
want to. You're not the only one you fucked over.
Let me finish, Strick.
People like a lie.
Because he doesn't want to show favoritism to the Blues. And that couldn't have been further from the truth. I remember Walt and I got into it once. We were yelling at each other at a face-off. And I said, you're using our friendship to your advantage. I go, oh, we got into it. We didn't. Ooh. And then I was walking out of the rink with Bronson, and Walt said hi to Bronson. He wouldn't even say hi to me. Oh, yeah. We had a little feud.
Yeah, that's
okay. But
I can see that.
But it's human nature. Like, I mean, is it? And you've got friends in the crowd. Like, when you're officiating a game in Ottawa or wherever you are, like, you don't have all your friends in the stands, right?
So yeah, but like, you just can't.
Can't let that bother you, right?
No, you can't let it bother you, but you just can't. First of all, there's two refs out there.
Yeah.
So I would hope if there was a penalty that I didn't call, he would call it. And then you just can't call a penalty that's not even there. Like, mm-hmm. you just referee the game, and whatever happens, happens.
You like two refs, or would you rather have one ref?
Well, I never. See, when I came in the NHL, my first year is when they expanded to two refs. So I'd only reffed in the OHL with one ref, and junior hockey back in Canada is one ref. So I had never reffed in the NHL with two refs. Would you like to do the game by yourself? Probably, you know, so that the players know what you're going to call, and, mm-hmm. and there's maybe a little bit more consistency, but it's just completely impossible to ref in the NHL with one ref. It's just too fast.
Interesting.
I remember a game. Gordy Dwyer got sick after the first period. We were in Chicago, so I had to work the game by myself, Arizona and Chicago. And I was three zones back. You know, I'm in the neutral zone, and they're on a 3-on-2 because it's mm-hmm. impossible. It's impossible to keep up.
And they know it, too, though.
And they know it.
The whack guys.
And you take out the red line and the stretch passes. Yeah. It's impossible.
You can't catch up.
You can't see everything.
These guys are just too fast. And that's when I knew it was time for me to retire. You know, when I'm 55 years old and Connor McDavid's 21 and
he's
going by me like I'm a turnstile at the New York subway, right? Like, it's these guys are just so – you see it. You guys see it. I use this analogy. I used it the other day that the only difference – you remember when you played, Cam, and you had Aaron Downey and you had Losey and you and the third and fourth line guys, okay? The only difference between fourth liners now and first liners is skill set. And I use this analogy all
the time. Skating's the same, right?
I use this analogy all the time. I guarantee you there are third and fourth line players on the Toronto Maple Leafs that are better skaters than Jonathan Tavares. Jonathan Tavares isn't a great skater. He's not fast, but he's like...
He could 10-2 the motherfucker.
But he's so skilled.
He's so skilled and so smart, you know?
But the third and fourth line players are just as good as skaters or better than the first line players.
Well, they got to be good skaters to be able to... Because they're not as skilled, so they got to do more in a different way to be able to keep up, even with their limited role. But as a ref, though, isn't the main thing that you want to accomplish is it not get noticed? Is it not be talked 100%. About? Is it not... No one even talks about you. It's just all about the game. That 100%. Means that you... You fucking refed it right.
100%. And that's a great question. And I do you remember?
Right, settle down with a great question.
No, Andy, settle down with a great question. Say it, okay? I don't get many of these great questions.
We know that Cam carries the So, you remember the Winter Classic?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great event.
Which one, Wrigley Field? Or
No, here, the one here.
Here, yeah. Okay.
Bush Stadium. Yeah. I did do Wrigley Field, you know, no big deal. I did the Olympics too, but you know, we won't. So, but the one here at Busch Stadium, I was like so excited to be able to do this game in front of my friends and family. Mm-hmm. But I was stressed out because I'm like, I cannot screw this game up.
Oh, God.
I cannot. I can't call a horrible penalty late against either team. And the game gets decided because of a shitty call that I made. And I remember, I think Tarasenko scored... Yeah. The empty net goal. Somebody scored an empty net goal to make it 3-1 or whatever.
Okay.
And there was like a minute left, and I actually got a little choked up on the ice. And I'm like, whew. It was like all of a sudden all this weight was lifted off me.
Really?
And I was like, oh, good. The game went good. Nobody's talking, like Cam just said, no one's talking about the officiating. Yeah. They're just talking about what a great event this was, what a great game it was. So, yeah, that.
Blues won organically. You know, Blues won. It wasn't like a fucking game up.
No, exactly. Or on a power play or whatever. But do you, like, referees, like, are you, like, when it's a big game, like, if it's hockey night in Canada or if it's late in the season and, like, first place is on the line or teams battling to get into the playoffs, last game of the season. Are those games more meaningful to you, or for you? Like, do you get more amped up for certain games?
For sure, and it would be, you know, a lie if you said no, every game means the same. Yeah. It of course it should, but I remember Chris Rooney and I were working game 7. It was in the first round. It was between the Flyers and the Rangers, and it was at Madison Square Garden, one of my favorite buildings to work.
Oh, God, yeah.
Cam scored a beauty goal there one night.
He hooked me up. Yeah. That's privilege.
Yeah, I took care of Cam.
St. Louis privilege, baby.
Cam kicked
Wait a minute.
Cam scored in a game I was refereeing.
Did you hear about that mug?
No.
Yeah.
It took like 40 minutes, and I was like throwing around.
What, to review it?
Yes.
We didn't review it back then.
Oh, okay.
You guys were talking for a long time.
We had to huddle up.
We had to huddle up, and I'm like, well, Cam doesn't get many, so we'll let you off.
Why don't you turn the mic on for that one? I want to hear that.
Like, they would have been like, no, oh, that makes sense.
But he honestly didn't kick it. He went off his skate, but he was like going hard to the net and went off his skate and went in.
He celebrated.
My wife was there. My buddies were there. It was the most loveliest thing in the world.
He celebrated like it was game seven of the Stanley Cup
Finals. I know. It's so funny.
It was awesome. Oh, but anyway, so it's game 7. It's Rangers-Philly, and it's an hour and a half for the game. And we're in the dressing room. And the Ranger fans, the building's already packed. Mm-hmm. And it's, let's go Rangers. An hour and a half before the game. The building is rocking. So we come out of the tunnel at MSG, and you come out in that ice, and you're like, I'm friggin' ready to go. This is awesome.
Yeah.
This is awesome. Like, you are pumped up. You got to control your emotions because you don't want to come out and call five. And Rooney and I, it was kind of when you could get away with not calling a lot of penalties. And we called one penalty, and I remember I called it. It was against Zach Rinaldo for interference.
He probably murdered somebody.
Yeah. Guy didn't have the puck, right? And he just hammered him. And we called one penalty the entire game, game 7, right? And the players, but they knew it. They knew what we were going to call. And so, yeah, Montreal, I loved working in Montreal. Before my stuff went down, and it wouldn't have happened because of COVID, but there were four buildings I wanted to work in. I wanted to work my fourth game in Montreal, my third to last game at MSG, my second to last game in Philly, and my last game in St. Louis. And the reason I picked those, you know, Montreal, Rangers, Madison Square Garden, and Philly, I loved the Philly fans. They were awesome. Yeah. And they have a guy there, the sign guy, and he's been there 30, 40 years, season tickets. And he's behind the visitor's net. And he's always got these signs, you know, insert puck here and so on. And every game I'd come out, he'd go, "Ref, you suck." He'd hold up the sign, "Ref, you suck." And so, you know, I was kind of known to maybe go out and after the game and have a few pops. And and so one night we're at Chickie and Pete's, and the sign guy comes up to me. He goes, "Hey, I'm the sign guy." I'm like, "Oh, nice to meet you." And so I buy him a beer, and we close the place down and just have a blast together. And next game I'm doing in Philly, I come out, and from that day until the end of my career, he'd hold up a sign, say, "Welcome back." And wow. Now he was my buddy. Yeah. I'd give him a pump. I'd give him a wave. And I loved the Philly fans.
Yeah,
I
did. Kill him with kindness, man.
Reverse psychology,
man. Kill him with kindness. That's how you do it.
Yep.
And
they'll love you after that.
I know. It's the best advice.
I remember
ever.
In Philly, quick story. It was Lindros's first game back in Philly after he went to Toronto. And I was working the game with Don Van Massenhoven, and we're in the dressing room before the game, and we look up on the TV. We're watching warm up, and Darcy Tucker's playing Shane Corson. Oh, like, there were some badass.
O2?
Yeah.
O2.
That's the shit kick. Oh,
and,
Lord.
And they're fighting at warm up. They're all at center ice going.
Really?
Rashear and Domi.
And you're not on the ice for that, are you?
No, we're in the dressing room.
Yeah.
And so those type of games, you're like, this is going to be fun.
Do you like those games?
100%.
Though? Okay.
100%. I don't like a game that there's one penalty and there's no intensity. Like, I'd have lots. I remember Danny Boyle, great guy. He yelled at me one night, and then he comes up to me later and he apologizes. I said, "Don't you ever apologize." He goes, "What do you mean?" I go, "We need intensity in this game. Mm-hmm. We need passion." I said, "Now, if you get personal, then that's, but I would always, I'd yell at players. They'd yell at me like, it's an intense game. Don't apologize. We need more intensity in our game."
But do you like, listen, because Rick Tca was talking about this, and I think Chiefs talked about it too a little bit. Like, you know, they get into it with refs. They don't like the referee that then gets their feelings hurt and pouts the rest of the game, right? And they want, they like him to come back over, and then you can have a conversation. Yeah. Like, where's the line? Like, when do you say, you know what, I'm done with this guy for the rest of the night versus, you know what, I'm going to go back over and like solve the issue or whatever?
Well, first of all, I never wanted to call a penalty that Tock was when he was coaching, because I was afraid he'd kick the shit out of me. Right?
Most intimidating guy behind the bench?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. For sure. But he's a great guy, and he just got that gig with TNT. Yeah. He'll do a great job there. I'm excited to watch him. And with coaches, like, a lot of guys didn't like Tortorella. Mm-hmm. I love Torts.
Yeah.
Torts is old school. And I had an incident, it was probably 5-6 years ago. I was working a game in Montreal, and Nick Foligno, I called a penalty against him in the third period, and Nick goes, "You don't effing respect me," and just went on about this whole respect factor that I didn't respect him, and he's the captain of the team and the leader of the team, and it really bothered me because I really respected Nick Foligno.
Yeah.
His dad, Mike Foligno, remember?
Great guy.
Yeah, Maple Leaf. Yeah.
He was coaching in Hershey when I was in the minor leagues and coming up. And Mike Foligno was awesome with me. He just was fantastic. He knew I was going to make mistakes, and he was just a tremendous human being. And so I always had a soft spot for Marcus and Nick when they came in the league because of their dad. So it bothered me. And about a month went by, and I'm working a game in Columbus. And before the game, I go down and I knock on Torts' office, and Shazzy's there and Torts, and they're like, "Yeah, Timmy, come on in." And I go, "Can you get Nick?" And they go, "Sure." And they bring Nick into the office, and I said, "Nick, I said, do you remember what you said to me in Montreal about, you know, me not respecting you?" I go, "I couldn't be further from the truth." I go, "I love you. I love how you play. I love the passion you have for the game." I go, "I just want you to know, and you know my relationship with your dad, I said, I just want you to know I respect the hell out of you." And him and I hugged, and he leaves, and Torts goes, "I love that." He goes, "We need more of that in this league." And some of our younger refs, they're afraid maybe to talk. And I'm not saying you need to be friends with the players on the ice, but you also,
communicate, man.
We're in this game. Absolutely. We're in this game together.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just try to get along and make the game better, you know. So
where do you stand on you think referees should be able to talk to the media, like, well, after games, like if there's a controversial play? I know they have a pool reporter and whatever, but I'm talking like, can a referee do a media scrum, do a one-on-one interview for television to maybe provide an explanation to where, you know, the fan base, the teams aren't flipping out and whatever, and everybody just kind of knows where everything stands.
Well, that's a good question. And it was kind of on social media last night because Sam Holbrook, the umpire for the Tampa Red Sox game. Did you see the play last night?
No.
So it was the top of the 13th inning, and Tampa hits a double. Well, it's going to be probably a double or a triple, and the guy's going to score. And they're going to go up a run going in the bottom of the 13th, or at least up one run. And it hit the Red Sox, it hit the Red Sox player off the wall and then went out of bounds.
Oh, the ground rule double or something. Ground I saw that double. On social media.
Ground rule double. About it, yeah. So all of a sudden they had to bring the guy back, and they wound up losing the game. So Sam Holbrook, the umpire, came out and did a press conference and explained the rule and did a great job explaining it. And so your question about, and I've been asked that a lot over the years, it's not a bad idea. The problem is, I don't know where you draw the line, because some guys would be better at explaining it than other guys.
Okay.
Some guys...
Just like some guys can't turn the mic on and announce a penalty where other guys can.
Right.
For whatever reason, that's like the most difficult thing to do. NFL referees are so good at it, and hockey referees... Most of them really can't do it. It's the strangest thing.
Yeah. So, there were times in games where I would like to be able to come out when I was reffing and explain why I called something late. Yeah. But like I said, some guys are better at it than others. Some guys just don't have the communication skills. It could be a disaster.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And
the league doesn't want that.
And that's why we have PR people.
You get recognized a lot when you're like officiating, like after games in other cities. Like people know, the fans know the referees, or you can
Yeah, a lot of cities for sure. You know, Yeah, yes and no.
Okay. Do they look at you and they say, I recognize you from something, and then all of a sudden you say, yeah, I was Braden Shin.
He hands him his card.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought that was you.
Oh, yeah. I scored two today. See that?
You think hockey's the hardest game to officiate?
100%.
Really?
100%.
Like when you watch basketball and football and all this stuff?
Yeah.
Baseball?
Yeah. Like Ronnie Culpa's my buddy. He's from here. He's an umpire with MLB. And we always joke, you know, about, I go, Culp, like, you literally stand there. You don't move. Does an umpire's heartbeat ever get over 120?
I don't think so.
Well, a lot of them are overweight. Yeah. So it's like, they probably, 130 degrees. They don't have to
be in great shape.
It's not a fun thing. At least you're cruising around. They just sit there. I don't know.
Speaking about
horrible.
130 degrees, it's like 140 degrees.
It's never been this hot.
That's why I bring five different shirts.
It's never been this hot, ever, in the history of this podcast.
But I don't know why hockey is such a lightning rod for people criticizing the officiating. It has been going on for 75 years.
And you see it now probably coaching your kid.
100%.
How frustrated are you with the officiating when you're coaching your kid?
Like Jamal Mayers and I coach the Central States team here. Both our sons play on it. And we were yelling at the refs in Grand Rapids the other day. And him and I talked.
Even you're yelling at the refs.
Yeah.
Jesus.
And I don't know if he did it on purpose, but... we get a penalty late and I'm yelling at the ref going like, it was the wrong call. Like he 100% made the wrong call, and him and I are yelling at each other. We drop the puck. He gives my son Bronson a penalty right away. And I'm like, did you do this on purpose? Like I was like,
of course he did.
So anyway, so Jammer and I talked after. I go, we can't yell at the refs anymore. We can't. So I get it when people yell at the refs. Yeah. Like we're in Central States right now. We're yelling at refs. Like it's just it, but you can't do it. They're now if it these were men, okay, I would never yell at a kid. Like I've got my ref school here in St. Louis, and you know we're trying to improve officiating in the area and so on. But when a grown man is out there and he's not putting the effort in.
That's
when I get frustrated.
That's another story.
I'm like, dude, you're getting paid. Like, this isn't just a public skate for you. Like, put an effort in.
It's just with your kids, too. Exactly. And Andy and I talk about this all the time with the parents and with their kids and the refs and all that stuff. Like, sometimes, like, the kid needs to learn about having a bad officiating. Like, the kid needs to learn that if your coach is bitching here, then you do something just a little minute, like, they're going to get you. Like, they need to learn that kind of shit. So it's like, and same with the parents, too. It's like, with the coach, and you do this as well, it's like, sometimes, even if you don't agree with the coach, which you're going to agree with Jamal, but just in a different sense, let them learn that they're dealing with a fucked up coach. Like, they just need to learn it. Instead of just burying them this way, just learn from it and kind of go from there, because it's all going to change anyway if you figure it out.
Yeah.
Cam and Strick podcast here for our boy Dan Bellman with Bellman.com.
Yeah, baby.
You need some new wheels? Mm. Why not get a Cadillac, a Buick, a GMC? Yeah. Head out to Troy today. Yeah. And again, don't forget about Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram right across the street.
No doubt.
Right there in Troy, Missouri. Mm-hmm. Visit them online. Check out their new selection, the pre-owned selection, the best service you will find anywhere in the country. Bellman.com. BehlmannN.com. Get yourself some new wheels in time for the summer.
Yeah.
Now back to the interview.
Hey, before we get into some stuff, like, what's your background? Like, aren't you adopted, right? I mean, tell me about, like, your life, like, growing up, and, like, how'd you become a ref? Did you play hockey? Like, all that type of stuff.
Yeah, so I was adopted. I was left at an adoption agency when I was young. I don't want to say I had a hard life, but I grew up in a trailer park in Canada. That was embarrassing in high school when you're inviting your girlfriend back to your trailer park, right?
Trailer park, really? No shit.
Yeah. And the good, the only
like
good
a real trailer park.
Good for you.
Yeah, yeah. Like a trailer park.
Yeah, if a tornado comes, you're
I didn't know, like, yeah. I didn't know, I could see the Canadian trailer parks being a little nicer than, like, the American trailer park. I don't know. Like, no, we're talking real trailer park.
Motherfucker, trailer park's a trailer park.
Yeah, dude. You're right.
It is
right.
What it is.
Yeah. And there was this kid there. I forget his last name. His first name was Joe, and he was like 4 or 5 years older than me. He was a big dude, and he'd kick the shit out of me every day. And
really?
So it was kind of a tough life growing up, but I always just persevered and had a lot of resiliency. And I was lucky. I didn't really get teased that I was growing up in a trailer park, because I was a pretty good athlete. We lived in a small town of 1,500 people in Canada. And so the rink was where everybody hung out. And so I was a pretty good hockey player, but I was small. And then I started officiating. And then my mom died of cancer when she was only 50 years old. So it was kind of a shitty life for a while, but I just always...
That's your adopted mom, right?
Yeah, yeah. So in the summertime, I was bored one day, and mom and dad were like, why don't you go over to the golf course? They're looking to... We lived by a golf course, a country club, but we weren't obviously members.
The trailer park wasn't wasn't on the 11th hole.
It was on the poor side of the highway that ran through.
Exactly. So I went over and I got a caddying job, and I caddied all summer for actually the pro there. And caddied all summer. And then when the wintertime rolled around, I missed having to spend money. So mom and dad were... I was 13 years old. They were like, why don't you referee the little kids, the six, you know, the mini mites and mites and so on. So I started refereeing, and that's how I got my start. Is I just started doing it as a young kid just for fun. And then I realized, probably in my early 20s, the American Hockey League was big in the east coast of Canada at the time. They had the Fredericton Canadiens, where Claude Julien played. They had the St. John Flames, where Marty St. Louis played. They had the Moncton Hawks, where Brett Hull played, Cape Breton Oilers. We had a lot of teams in the Maritimes then. And so I was the local linesman. So the NHL would send in Stephen Walkham and Don Van, you know, guys that were still in the minor leagues, and to ref these games, and I'd work the lines as the local linesman. And so I was working for a bank, and the bank that I was working for transferred me, gave me a promotion, moved me to Toronto. And then that's kind of when things took off.
How old were you then?
I was 26, 20.
Oh, really?
I was 28 when I moved to Toronto.
To start officiating in the OHL?
Correct.
Wow.
Is that late or no?
Not really, no, because most refs then were getting hired in their early 30s.
So it's not your full-time job when you're officiating in the O.
No, so I was still working at the bank in Toronto, and then I was working in the OHL. And then There was a young linesman. His name was Angelo D'Amico, and his dad was obviously John D'Amico, the Hall of Fame linesman. And so his dad would come out and watch his games, and he liked the way that I reffed. And it's funny because the NHL has scouts for referees just like they have scouts for players. So back then it was John D'Amico, Brian Lewis, who used to be a ref, Wally Harris, different guys that used to ref in the NHL were now scouts for referees.
Do you know when they're there?
Some nights you did, some nights you didn't. Mm. So I was doing a game in North Bay, and there was this longtime ex-NHL ref. His name was Dave Newell. He was a phenomenal referee, and he worked for the league, and I didn't know he was at the game. So I'm getting undressed after the game, and I'm driving back 4 hours to go back to Toronto so I can go to work the next morning. And he knocks on the door, and he comes in, and he goes, "I am Dave Newell," and my eyes light up. And he had this big pad of paper, and on it, all he had was AVH with a big circle around it. And he goes, "Do you know what this means?" And I go, I don't know, sir. I don't know what that means." He goes, "Those are Andy Van Helleman's initials." He goes, "You remind me a lot of Andy Van Helleman."
Ooh.
And he goes, "But don't try to be Andy Van Helleman." He goes, "I just want you to be yourself." So he got me really on the radar, and then they hired me. Remember, we had the International Hockey League, the IHL.
Yeah.
So on the weekends, they would send me to Fort Wayne and Orlando and Kalamazoo and all these places, and I'd work IHL games. And my first IHL game, it was in Indianapolis, and this guy just got laid out, blindside hit in the neutral zone in the first period, and I missed the call. I was so nervous, and, you know, it was my first pro hockey game, and John D'Amico was at the game, and he came down in between periods and just ripped me a new one.
Really?
Yeah, and I figured my career's done. Like, I'm done. And another good story, I was working in Detroit. It was the Detroit Vipers. Steve Ludzik was playing. Yeah. Brad Shaw was playing on the team.
Is Kevin Weeks there, too? He made it.
And the NHL was experimenting going to the two-referee system. So they would always, you know, like they do now with the American League, they will try out rules in the AHL before they bring it up to the NHL. Mm-hmm. So we were going to do a four-man game in Detroit, first time that they'd ever done one. And I knew Brian Lewis, the head of director of officiating for the NHL, was going to be there. Bob McCammon, the president of the IHL, was going to be there. All the big rigs were there watching the game. So the game's going great, and I'm still a trainee at this point. I'm not full-time. I'm not under contract with the NHL. That's my hope, is to get hired. And so I'm working with just a local ref, and the game's going fantastic, and we get a TV timeout, and it's a tied game. And I said to him, and back then we didn't call any penalties, you know, unless it was a scoring chance or, you know, a flagrant foul or whatever. And I said to him, I'm the one that brought it up, which is so ironic. I said, listen, no, like, cheap penalties, like, you know, unless the guy's on a breakaway, we're not calling anything in the last 2 minutes of this game. And for whatever reason, I just have a brain fart, and I call this terrible tripping penalty in the neutral zone. Had no bearing on the play against the Vipers. And the visiting team scores in the power play, and they literally, the Vipers, are chasing me off the ice.
Oh,
like,
my
they
God.
Are pissed at me. Like, they are losing their minds. So I come in the dressing room. Now, I got to drive 4 hours back to Toronto after the game.
Like, lock the door.
Oh, get in at 2 or 3 in the morning, get up at 6 to go to work. And Brian Lewis, so I come in the dressing room. I throw my helmet against the wall. Like, I'm pissed.
Well, you knew.
I knew I made a terrible call.
Okay.
And Brian Lewis comes in. This is the guy that I want to hire me, right? And he gives me the finger, like, come on outside in the hallway. So I get up and I walk out in the hallway, and he looks at me and he goes, swear to God, he looks and he goes, maybe you're not as good as you think you are. And he does a 180 and walks away. And I go, my career's done. And I'm driving back to Toronto. I go, it was a good run. Like, I'm not getting hired. Like, I'm done. And so there were many times when I was trying to make it, I'm like, I don't think it's going to happen.
Is your mindset at that moment already that this is what you want to do for your career?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like,
okay.
Like, I'm like, I want to do this. I want to be a ref in the NHL. And I was making good money at the bank back then. This is in 1998. And I was making like 150 grand. I was doing,
Dang, boy.
Yeah, in 98, right?
Yeah, 9 to 5, though. Sitting at the fucking
nine
bank.
To 5, right? And I'm, and I'm working games on the weekend. I've got all kinds of money. Like, life is good. And I remember it was a Friday afternoon in the summer, and Brian Lewis called me up. I'm on Yonge Street in Toronto with my girlfriend at the time. And he calls me up and he says, we want to offer you a contract. And I go, great. And he goes, I know you have a good job. So if you want to take the weekend and think about it, I completely understand. And we'd like to hire you, and the salary's 56 grand in the American Hockey League. And I go, I don't need to think about it. I said, I'll take it.
So you quit your banking job.
So I quit so I go in Monday and I gave him 2 weeks notice and I quit and made.
Yeah. Well, you're reffing in the OHL. You're seeing a cool life. You're seeing all kinds of badass players. And at the time, like, dude, that's like addicting. Let me ask you this though. Who's a cat that came in the locker room and bitched you out for missing the call as a blindside hit?
Brian Lewis, right?
So,
John D'Amico.
D'Amico. So, yeah. Like, when he goes and yells at you, and you know these guys are watching, you miss a hit, were you just like, I missed a hit? What does he say to you? Like, well, you should have been back here.
You don't say anything. You just listen.
But where should you have been? How'd you fuck that
up? Well, because I saw the hit, but I just didn't react to it. Yeah.
So
yeah.
You saw it.
Yeah. It wasn't like I didn't see it.
I'm just curious on how they evaluate
like a deer in headlights. It was my first pro game. These are men. I'm not reffing in the OHL.
And then three seconds goes by and you're like, oh, it's over.
They carried the guy off in a stretcher, right? Like, you know, I'm like, well, obviously something happened. And they're carrying him off in a stretcher.
But when the guy gets hit like that, and you're kind of stunned, right, because you don't know what to do, is it like one, two, shit's passed. I can't call it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. How late can you call it?
Well, it's kind of like what Cam said. All of a sudden, it's 1,001, 1,002.
It's too late.
And then all of a sudden, you're like, shit, I should have reacted to that, you know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that happens to every ref over the years. In any sport, you're like,
just get a brain fucking freeze.
You do. You're like, shit, I should have reacted. And then it's too late. So
how many years in the American League?
Two.
Okay. And then what's the starting salary in the NHL? You don't mind me
now
asking.
Now it's good. I think the start back then I was like at 85, so I went from 56 to 85. But I think the starting salary now for a young official coming up is like 150.
Are officials protected? Like, does the officials association truly protect the referees, like a players association or whatever?
Yeah. We're not called a union. We're called an association. Wes McCauley's our president. Does a great job. We've got a great collective bargaining agreement. The league treats us very well. You know, I made a great living with the NHL. They treated us with nothing but respect.
You have to cringe though when there's like a labor dispute because that's out of your control, right,
dude? 2004.
Oh, you God. Know,
I'm looking to buy a house over in Brentwood here, and I buy a house and Mellenby says, I don't think you should be, and I bought it in like July or August.
Man.
And he goes, I don't think you should buy a house. I'm like, no, we're not, you know, we're not. And we, you know, there's a lockout and we didn't get paid for the whole year.
Could you have gone down and officiated in the American League? Or
we could have, but us as a union,
want to steal their jobs.
Correct. 100%.
You would have had your fucking hands full down in that league at that time, baby.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was.
Were you playing there?
Fuck yeah. Crazy. It was. Down there, dude.
Where were you playing?
Albany. We had like five shit kickers. You know, Binghamton had McGrath and then fucking all the monsters. Oh, every team was loaded with
How scary
guys.
Was it fighting Brian McGrath?
Yeah, I mean.
Because he's tough.
He's really tough.
He's got a head on him.
Throw left, so it's like, you know what's coming at you, right? But like that, I remember getting in crazy brawls where the refs had to get in, grab guys, do this. It just was psychotic. Like, how much has it changed since
I love that era.
Wasn't that fun though?
Oh, it was fun. Oh. Like, it was fun. Bench clearing brawls.
Oh, yeah. And you're just like, all right, let it go for a second. I got to pick my spot.
It was fun. Like, you knew that every night, you know, you'd look at the lineup and you're like, okay, we got Cam Jansen, we got, you know, all these tough guys. And it was the best, though, like Ty Domi. And it was fun, you know, and I get the sport evolves and society changes and it's just kind of not acceptable anymore. But that era was fun. Like that was, you were men. Like,
oh, guys, just sitting in the locker room, like, oh, looking at each other, like, oh, this guy's a
psychopath.
Like, they called up this motherfucker. He fucking hits guys. Like, we got to keep our head on a swivel or whatever.
Well, I can't even imagine like what it was like, because I remember I was having a glass of wine with Billy Armstrong, that's the GM of Arizona now. Great dude. Him and I and Paul Dvorsky one night were at the Toronto Airport Marriott, and Billy was working for the Blues, and we got talking because Billy played in Providence when I reffed in the American League. And because he was a big guy, people thought that he should fight, right? Well, he hated fighting. He hated it. And he goes, Peelsy, I'd lay in bed during the day going, oh, my God, I got to fight this guy tonight. Like, I hated it. So
ages you, man.
Yeah.
Hey, how about when – and Cam kind of touched on it earlier, but real quick, the – Bortuzzo shoots the puck, it hits you right in the balls, and then it goes in. Like,
is that a classic
that is
or what?
Once in a lot that'll never. You couldn't even try
Did
to
you get
do
laid
that
night.
No.
Did it hurt? Did you know that that goal wouldn't count?
No. So, well, I knew it wouldn't count, but I didn't even. So, what happens, Bortuzzo?
You're like in the corner.
I'm in the corner, and I love Bort's. Like, he's the best. But I always tell people, I go, that goal changed the Blue season. They went on to win the cup that year. They were struggling.
It was that season?
Yeah, yeah, it was that season. Because it was in December. And then they you know, January, they turned things around. But usually when a defenseman dumps it in, he rims it on the wall or he shoots it at the net. But he kind of, he shot it right at me. And it wasn't hard. Like, I could see it coming, but it was like at my waist area. So I couldn't duck and I couldn't jump.
Yeah.
And I kind of, it hits me. And it, everyone thought it hit me, you know, where, and, but it hit me in the left hip and I'm in the left corner and Luongo's to my right. So it hits me and it didn't hurt, but I kind of stumbled back and I hit my head on the boards and now I'm on all fours like this and I hear the horn go off and I go, are you friggin' kidding me? I go, so the linesman, Ryan Galloway, comes over. He goes, Peelsy, are you okay? I go, did that puck go in the friggin' net? He goes, yeah. I go, and I won't tell
highlight
you what I
reel.
Said. I go, are you kidding me? Like, I couldn't believe that. I just couldn't believe it.
But did you hit your head or something?
Yeah, but not a lot. I
because
you
had to leave the game.
I milked
you got
it.
Hips
you
of steel, homie.
I milked it.
You got hips of steel, dude.
Yeah. Well, I milked it because I'm like, I gotta get gain my composure here. Like, I can't even believe what just happened. So Burley comes out, Ray Burley, the great trainer for the Blues.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And he's like, Peels, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, yeah. He goes, let's take you in the dressing room. I said, that's a great idea. So they take me in. And did you guys, Cam, did you guys have to do those concussion things?
Oh,
like at
God,
the beginning
yeah.
of the season, the
yep.
baseline test?
Yep.
So we do that at our training camp, a baseline test, so that when you have to get tested after, they obviously have a
parasite.
Right. So I come in and I'm getting like all the answers wrong. And Jimmy Mayer's our security guy,
Jimmy.
Yeah. And he's in there with me. And somehow I passed the test because I couldn't believe that I passed it. And Jim, we're walking down the hall and Jimmy goes, I didn't think you were going to pass that test. He goes, so I come back on the ice and the crowd's cheering. Yeah, the crowd's cheering. And so I go down to Roberto Luongo, who's one of the best guys ever. And he goes, Peelsy, are you okay? And I go, yeah, Lou, I'm good. I go, but do you know what? He goes, what? I go, for the rest of my career, I'm going to be able to say I scored on Roberto Luongo.
With my penis.
So 3 nights later, I'm working in Chicago, and Florida happens to be playing in Chicago. So we're skating around in warm-up, and Reimer's the backup. And they're starting Reimer that night in Chicago. And Lou comes right up to me. I swear to God, he goes, Peelsy, he goes, they won't even ref me now when you're, or they won't even dress me now when you're roughing our games, he says. We laugh.
Did you get to keep the puck?
That's a great question.
So, no, it's not. Yes, but go ahead.
Yes,
Jesus Christ.
I got two of those, by the way.
So the off-ice officials brought it in after with the tape around it. And said, first NHL goal.
I love
he
it.
He knew the answer to that already.
So I come home, and I'm having a glass of wine in bed. And Tisha, my wife, she's like, you're unbelievable. She goes, you score a goal. You're like one of the only refs to ever score one, or the only one. She goes, and you score it for the home, your home city in St. Louis. Like it didn't.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Like
I
it
know.
Didn't
what
happen.
Are the chances?
It didn't happen in Columbus or Carolina. No. Or it had to happen. So So now we're laying in bed and my phone is blowing up. Like, I mean, it is just going crazy. And I get a text from number 99, right? The great one. And I show Tisha and he goes, I think Holly had, how many goals did Holly have?
741.
Yeah. And he says to me, he says, you've only got 740 goals to go before you tie Holly. So I said to Tisha, I go, I have finally arrived. I go, Wayne Gretzky is texting me. Hey. So it was unbelievable.
That was incredible.
You
know, like you could well, get and the good fun, text.
Well, and the funny thing was Brad Kovacic, one of my best buddies, he's a linesman. And he loves the Today Show. And he calls me up that morning. He goes, dude, turn on the Today Show. He goes, they just talked about Putin and Trump. And they said, we're going to, and when we come back from commercial, we're going to talk about a goal that was scored in St. Louis. He goes, it's on the Today Show.
That's
it was
amazing. Like, the only hockey highlight ever.
That's amazing.
I know. Like, this yeah, is some sort of show. Game. We don't know what it is, yeah, right. But there's a black thing out there that got hit. Oh, yeah. God.
Usually only if it's the Olympics.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to ask you this. This whole situation with Greg Wyshynski, okay?
Oh, Greg, yeah.
Okay, first off, I didn't know you weren't allowed to have a cocktail with a media member. I never knew that.
Well, you are, but probably not a good idea to have a tequila shot and get it posted on social media.
So he posted that, right?
Yeah, because we're not allowed to be on social media.
Got it.
He posted.
That's what it is. You're not allowed to be on social media, okay? Because they suspended you for one game or whatever.
Correct.
So what led to you meeting up with him?
So it was funny because he would always tweet out about me, write articles about me.
Negative shit, though, right?
Like, bad. Like, this guy sucks. He's the worst ref, blah, blah, blah. And I didn't understand. I'm like, did I steal his girlfriend or
no, he probably didn't have one.
No, probably not. But so, and I couldn't understand it because like I never ever professed to be Carey Frazier, Don Koharski, Billy McCreary, the all time great referees. But what I took pride in is I worked playoffs every year that I was in the league. So there's 34 refs and they take the top 20 guys every year. So I took pride in the fact that I was always in the playoffs. So it wasn't like he was carving somebody that had never worked playoffs. Like when I got picked for the Olympics, he wrote a whole big article about it, what a joke it was. And my guys that I didn't follow him because a lot of our guys had fake Twitter accounts and fake social media accounts. But I didn't follow. I didn't know who the guy was. So my buddies that I worked with would send me these messages that he would put out. So it started to bug me because, and I shouldn't have let it bother me, but it was like my kids, you know, Bronson was young and Brielle was just born. And I'm like, you know, they're going to see all this stuff on the internet when they get older, they're going to think their dad sucked. And, you know, and so Jeff Merrick, who's a friend of mine, him and Wyshynski did that podcast together. And Merrick's like, you two need to sit down, hash it out. And, you know, I know you're a good guy.
What are you hashing out? Like, what's his?
I don't know. I don't know what his beef was with me.
Okay.
So we meet at this bar in New York called Foley's Pub in New York. And we're drinking and having beers and so on. And he goes, let's do a tequila shot and let bygones be bygones. So he gets the bartender to take this picture of us. And I'm not even thinking, you know, he's going to post it. And so I wake up in the morning and my phone's ringing and it's my boss, Stephen Walkham. And he goes, have you seen this picture on the internet? And I'm like, no, I had no idea what he's talking about. So he tells me, I'm like, oh geez, this is not good. So they call me back about 11 o'clock, 11:30. Coley calls me, Coley Campbell. And he says, you're not working tonight in Jersey. And I go, please don't take me off the game. Like, please. And so they take me off the game and, you know, it's kind of a big deal. Everyone's talking about it, but they kept me in New York, which was good because I worked the Rangers the next night. So I knew I wasn't in a lot of trouble because they didn't send me home and I'm working the Rangers the next night. And so that was on a Thursday. I worked the Rangers, fly home Friday. I'm working the Blues on Monday. Everything's died down. It's Saturday, Friday, Saturday, you know, social media, they're on to the next story. So everything's died down. And I remember Sunday night, working the blues on Monday. Sunday night, I get up like 2 a.m. and I go, I remember exactly what I did. I went out to the fridge, grabbed the orange juice, took a drink, and I looked at my phone. It was out there on the in the kitchen. And I've got like 50 text messages from probably you guys, Elliot Friedman, every media guy in North America going, have you been suspended by the league? Well, I don't know who leaked it to him, because at the time, the league never said that I had been suspended. So Ron Fournier, who's an ex-NHL linesman, has a radio show in Montreal and on Sunday nights. And somebody told him, and I don't know who it was, but somebody told him that I'd been, so he said this on a show. Well, then it started a whole, the whole cycle, the whole social media thing just came back again. So now I'm working the game on Monday. Now it's a big story again. And I remember Stephen Walkham called me that day, because I'm really like, I've got severe anxiety over this. Like, I'm like, am I going to get fired? And he goes, are you okay to work the blues game tonight? I go, yeah, I'm okay. And I remember I went out there and I was like, not myself, you know, we got through the game. It was just a routine game. And then everything died down and so on. But yeah, I don't know why he ever, like, I really honestly never got a good answer for him of why.
Did you reach out and be like, why would you post that
picture? No, I never talked to him.
Can I give you
the
answer? To get likes. I mean, what do you think he did that for? To get attention.
Good point.
Why did you do anything?
Good point.
To get attention.
Good point. That's exactly
you both don't know that?
Yeah.
Like, okay, easy. Cam's got all the answers now. No,
it's an easy one.
But you're right. It's all
easy. You're 100% right. I just don't know why he picked me. Like, I don't know what I ever did.
But you guys had it seemed like, okay, you took the picture, whatever. So you had a conversation. But he wrote a story about you meeting up with him, right? But it wasn't even like that nice of a story. Was
no,
it?
It was kind of.
I was like, what? This guy. And then he's
kind of douchey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the problem here?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know why. I don't know what his problem was. So, no, I didn't talk to him since then. You know, that was 6 years ago now. That was 2015. Yeah. So,
and now you're on social media.
Now I'm on social media, but I don't follow them.
No. You put pictures of your kids and stuff like that, which is cool, man.
Hey, fighting on social media is a lose-lose battle anyway.
You think referees? It's probably good that you're not on social media, right? I mean,
as a ref
when you're working? Yeah,
it's not a good idea, because the comments, you know, like even when I start, so I had to stay quiet until September 1, and per our collective bargaining agreement. So I was able to go on social media September 1, and 99% of the people are like, hey, sorry to hear what happened. Love your
99.999%.
That's good.
But then the odd guy that goes, you're a loser and who cares what you have to say. And I'll click on him to see. And the guy's got 2 followers, right?
Yeah,
I'm like, and Panger told me when I was going on, he goes, you don't even, don't respond to those people. Yeah. Don't.
Twitter's the worst, man.
Yeah.
No, it's great advice.
And it's kind of, Twitter's kind of, not to get all philosophical, but it's kind of like hurt our society, because all these people just hide behind their Twitter accounts. And they're
mean, man. And they're very negative, you know?
And I'm like, we need more niceness in our life. Like, we need to just be nice
to
people.
It's easy to be mean, though, man. It's easy. They let it out.
I said to my kids today when I was leaving to come down here and they're getting ready for school, I said, and I say it to them, I don't say it to them every day because that gets old, but I said, make somebody's day better today.
Yeah.
Try to be nice to somebody.
No,
be
that's
nice
good
to
advice.
Somebody today at school.
I will say this, though, with social media, real quick, though. Sometimes people chirp you. And I said this, remember I told you, and all of a sudden you look at it and you're like, God, that was a dick move. And Kate would be like, wow. And all of a sudden I'm like, no, wait. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, Cameron, I'm just joking with you. And so, like, if you don't acknowledge...
Right.
Sometimes you acknowledge back. They're like, no, I'm just joking, because they listen to a pod.
Well, then
they're
like, wow, you really saw it and responded. I don't want to be a dick. So, like,
that
you
could
know,
be it, too. And
you know,
no doubt.
So, like, you know, then all of a sudden it's almost like you caught them.
Yeah. Right.
And then they want to apologize a little bit.
Right.
So, all right.
Anyway.
Listen, the night in Nashville.
Yeah. What happened in Nashville?
I don't know.
You're going to tell us. And listen, I remember talking to you that night, man. You know, and it was like you knew right away, right? I mean, it was like when somebody comes to your room, your dressing room there, they call you. Like,
When were you first made aware that the microphone was left on?
So, right after the game. So, to before I get into the story, because you know everyone knows what I said, and that wasn't my intent. And I'll give you a little preview. Is before that game, I wasn't going to see Nashville probably again the rest of the season because that happened on March 23rd. Or 24th, and I was retiring April 24th. My last game was in St. Louis, April 24th. And Pete Rogers, who's the equipment manager for the Preds, I've known Pete going back to the Rochester days. And Pete's, you know, Cam, you know, when you played, like these equipment managers, they bust their their butts off. Yep. Like they do everything, and they don't get paid what refs get paid and what players get paid, and they don't sleep. And so that afternoon I went out, I bought a nice bottle of Camus wine. Before the game, I go down to Pete's equipment room and I give it to him and I give him a big hug and it's like, hey buddy, I've known you for 30 years in pro hockey and thanks for everything. And Todd Richards, the assistant coach, and Richie just had a heart attack.
Yeah, I know.
How's he doing?
Apparently he's doing okay, I think.
That was scary.
I don't know the latest update.
He's a great guy and I hope he's doing well. So Richie's sitting in the room, and Richie and I and Pete are just sitting there and having a coffee and shooting the shit for half an hour, 45 minutes, way longer than I'd ever spend in another team's dressing room or equipment manager's dressing room. And we're talking about our kids and horses and everything. And so the reason I say that story is it was never my intent to get Nashville. You know, my words were I wanted to get an effing penalty against Nashville. What happened was Arvidsson, I thought, kicked out the Detroit Red Wing player's foot as he was coming out to the point. And I threw my arm up, and I shouldn't have because Kelly Sutherland, who is a great ref, was literally 20 feet from it, and I just had a brain fart, and I threw my arm up, and as soon as I did, I'm like, ah, shit, that's not a good penalty. So get to the box, and I announce the penalty, and I left my mic on. So there's a guy upstairs that's supposed to kill my mic, and he didn't.
Pause it down.
Yeah, and not that he didn't do it on. He just didn't get it shut off in time. So as we're going to commercial, I said to Kelly, "Yeah, I wanted to get a penalty against Nashville," which I don't know why I said that. It was a stupid thing to say, and that wasn't my intent. I think I was saying it to him more as because I really respect Kelly a lot as a referee. Mm-hmm. It was kind of my defense mechanism kicking in going, yeah, it was kind of a shitty call. And I was kind of embarrassed that I called that penalty because it wasn't a good call. And so we finished the rest of the game. Nashville wins the game. Oh, and one other thing, it wasn't my intent to get Nashville. We called one other penalty against them the entire game. We called two penalties against Nashville the entire game. So obviously I wasn't out there to get Nashville. And I would never... Like I said, you know, to somebody the other day, you don't survive in the NHL for 23 years if you have a reputation of wanting to get a team or wanting to call a penalty. Like, right. You just don't. That doesn't happen. And none of our refs would do that. So the game ends, and nobody says a word. And I'm in the dressing room, and Stephen Wacom, our director of officiating, has this policy that we don't have our phones on in the dressing room. So mine's on vibrate, and it's on the table sitting by my chair, and I hear it vibrating. I look over, and he's calling, and I show Kelly Sutherland. I show him my phone, and I go, wonder what he's calling for. And the first thing I thought of was, did someone score a goal tonight? Did a puck cross the line that Toronto didn't catch and we didn't catch? And because nothing had happened in the game. It was an easy game. So he goes, we got a big problem. And I go, what's wrong? And he goes, I'll send you the clip.
Oh, God.
He goes, and he tells me what happened. And so I get off the phone, and all the my colleagues are looking at me, and they go, what's going on? I go, I may get fired tonight. I remember exactly what I said. I go, I may get fired tonight. And they're like, what? And I tell them what happened. So I shower quickly. I go right down to Nashville's dressing room. And Mr. Poyle had already left the building, so his PR guy put me on the phone with him, Brandon Walker, puts me on the phone with Mr. Poyle. I said, you know, obviously that wasn't what I meant, wasn't my intent. He goes, you know, David was great. So then I asked to speak to John Hines. John comes out, and he could tell how upset I was, and he felt bad, and he goes, you know, I'd known John since he came in the league with New Jersey, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him and the Nashville organization, and he goes, I know you didn't mean it to me. I go, that's not what at all what I meant, John. Like, I don't know why it came out like that. It just did. So I get back to the hotel room, and I'm on the phone with, you know, Wes McCauley, our president, and Walkham, you know, him and I are talking, and I write an email to Mr. Bettman and Mr. Daly and Coley Campbell and Steve, and I explain the situation, what I meant, and that wasn't my intent. And so that night, actually, you know, I'm talking to Wes on the phone, and I go, I haven't called Tisha yet, because it's, you know, it's probably 11:30 back here.
Late.
And so I go to Wes, I go, am I going to get fired tonight? Or am I going to get fired? He goes, no, no, you're not going to get fired. So I get up. So I've been taken off my game in Dallas on Thursday, so because this game was on a Tuesday night in Nashville. So I book my own ticket on Southwest. I fly home Wednesday morning, and I'm at the airport, and I'm at the gate, and Walkham Steven calls me, and he says, I regret to inform you, you've worked your last game in the National Hockey League.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't go, oh, no, don't, do, you know, I didn't beg, I didn't grovel. I knew the decision was made. And I go, okay, I said, I got to let you go. I got to get on my plane. And that was it. So I still haven't told my wife because I literally was boarding. So I land, and I've got a million missed calls from her.
Oh, gosh.
And because now it's on social media. And
people are calling her probably, right?
They're texting her, calling her from all over North America.
Does she know you're on your way back home?
Yeah. No. No, she doesn't know because she doesn't. She thought I was going to Dallas.
She thought you were going to Dallas, yeah.
So I land, and obviously I call her, and she, you know, she's extremely upset, and my phone is, you know, it's going crazy. Everybody's reaching out. So I like telling this story because I won't say that it made it easy, but it's easy for your friends to call you that day or text you or whatever and reach out to you. But there was a call came across, and it was a Columbus number, and it was just a number. I didn't have whoever was calling me in my phone, and I answered the phone, and it was David Clarkson. And
Clarkie.
Yeah, Clarkie. Yeah. And Clarkie, I don't know if Cam, when you play with him, but he did not really like refs. Like,
no, he didn't.
He didn't. And him and I battled a lot really? On the ice. Well, he battled with every ref.
Okay. Yeah, he did.
And so I for a split second, I go, oh my God, he's going to say it looks good on you. Like I did. I thought he's going to, you know, because I knew he didn't like refs. And he goes, I just want you to know, he goes, I just got off the ice here in Denver, and that's where I retired, and I'm playing with some ex-players, and I just want to say what happened to you, I think, is a travesty, and I'm so sorry. And he goes, I played for four teams. He goes, every team I played for, when we were in the dressing room, we knew we had, whenever you were reffing our games, he says, we knew we had one of the best refs in the league, and we knew we had one of the fairest refs, and I just wanted you to know that. And I'm like, thanks, David. And then he was here a couple weeks after that for his son was playing in the Nationals. Yeah. And so we talked. And so for people like that to reach out and, you know, Gretz and, you know, I won't say what GMs or coaches, but
a lot of them.
A lot of them, a lot of players, a lot of current players, a lot of ex-players, GMs, presidents of clubs. So I drive home and I get home and I see Tisha, and I still haven't, like, you know, I'm a crier. Like, I cry, like, watching Undercover Boss because somebody does something nice for somebody.
I know.
So yeah,
emotional.
So she's crying, and I'm surviving. I'm just, like, kind of numb at this point. And, you know, the phone calls and the text messages and everything. And social media is just, like, it's crazy. And, you know, I didn't turn on the TV for a week because I knew, you know, for crying out loud, they you know, they talked about my thing on the Golf Channel. You know, they've never talked about hockey on the Golf Channel. I was in People Magazine. I was on Fox, CNN. I was on every show in the world. So, unfortunately, that afternoon at 1:30, Chaser calls me. And I had talked to him in the morning before that. And that was the same day that Bobby died.
Oh,
Bobby
God.
Plager. Yeah, yeah. And he calls me up and he goes, it chokes me up even thinking about Bobby because he was such a tremendous person. And Chaser goes, Peelsy goes, Bobby loved you so much. He said he thought he'd take the heat off you today. It's his exact words, because all of a sudden social media in St. Louis went all to Bobby. Yeah. Right? And so the kids came home from school. And as soon as I saw them, I started crying. Like, I'm hugging them and I'm crying because it really bothered me that it was the only thing. You know, I'm a big believer in things happen for a reason. And I've been through a lot of stuff in my life, but my whole life has been about perseverance and resiliency. And it was the only time that I really let it, well, it is the only time that I've ever cried about it. But when I saw my kids, I'm like, they're not going to be able to see their dad ref his final game. That really, it still bugs me. And because they were pumped about it, you know, Steve Chapman with the Blues, they had made up tickets, said Tim Peel's final game. We had 150 people coming to the game. Like, they
it was
were
the same day as your party, right?
Same day as my party.
I remember the game was a national game too.
It was an afternoon game.
Everyone was planning to go.
It was an afternoon game. So we were going to have the party after. And we still had the party and it was fun, but I saw my kids and I started crying, and a bit of me was because of that. And then in the same breath, I told them that Bobby had passed away, and my kids loved Bobby, and Bobby, you know how he was with kids. Like, he was just so nice to them and so awesome to them. So anyway, I'm surviving the whole day, and after the kids get home, Brielle's got horseback riding. So we're driving out to the horse stables, and just her and I. And it's funny how kids are, right? Like, she's 7.5 years old, and we're driving out, and she goes, she's sitting in the back seat, and I'll never forget it. She goes, Dada, can you do me a favor? I go, yeah, what's that, baby girl? She goes, can you tell people that you weren't fired by the NHL? And I'm like, God, I'm sitting in the front seat, and I start crying again. She doesn't know it, and I'm like, oh, my God, my little girl thinks that I've been fired by the NHL. And I told Tisha the story, and she's like, I have no idea where she even got that from. So anyway, it was a shitty day, but I survived it. And I knew what I said, like what I said, and I said it to many guys over the last few months, is I didn't use a racial overtone. Mm-hmm. I didn't get charged with the DUI. I didn't get charged with domestic abuse. Some things that maybe you will never recover from. I said the wrong thing. And I've been asked to do some public speaking, and this guy that I've been working with, he said to me, he goes, think about this. He goes, your audio clip is 2 seconds long. 2 seconds. That's all it is. He goes, I timed it. He goes, you built a reputation up worldwide. You built a reputation up in North America. You've built a reputation in your hometown, your adopted hometown of St. Louis. And he goes, and it was all taken away in a 2 second audio clip. And I go, wow, I never really thought of it that way. And so that was on a Wednesday, and they asked me to coach the 8 and 9 year olds in the spring program in Chesterfield for spring hockey. And it was, the first practice was on Friday, and all day I'm like stressed out because I'm like, you know, you've seen my picture on the Zamboni out there for the mortgages. You know, I know everybody there. That's where Bronson's played his entire minor hockey league career so far. And so I had extreme anxiety that day going, I'm going to walk in that rink and everybody's going to be looking at me going, Peel got fired by the NHL. And everyone says, well, you didn't get fired because they still paid you until September 1, and they didn't mess with your pension. But at the end of the day, I got fired. So I walk in the rink, And I see all these coaches and parents standing over there, and I'm like, okay, big boy, like, put your big boy pants on. Yep. And I walked over and I go, hey, what's going on with you guys? Anything new in your lives? And they all start laughing, kind
of
like
make a joke out of it.
And I'm like, hey, like, shit happens. Yep. You know, stuff happens, and it's how you deal with it. And I remember Sansone on that Wednesday when I flew home. Tony, you know, Big Tony, he's my best friend here, and he said, he goes, we're going out to dinner tonight. I said, he goes, you need to be seen. He says, we're going to Obie Clark's. We're going to the Ritz. We're going to this place. He goes, you need to be seen. He goes, you can't let people think that you're devastated by this. Yeah. I said, give me tonight to just decompress and spend the night with my family. And then the next couple nights, him and I went out and Tisha came with us. But I had to be out there and it wasn't a facade, but because I've my whole life, like I said, is about resiliency, but I had to, I'm not going to fold my tent up and go sit in the basement and feel sorry about myself. Everything I have is because of the National Hockey League. Do I wish the outcome had been different? Yeah, of course I do. But I can't blame anybody but myself. I'm the one that said it. I'm the one that made the mistake. So it's how you deal with it afterwards.
Yeah, and people support you here. I'm curious though, was it easier or harder knowing that your last game was going to be a month away?
Like it was harder.
Harder.
Yeah.
Because it's not like you were going to ref for five more years.
Correct. Whatever, right? Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that, Andy. Like if I had 2 or 3 years left, you know, I would have been devastated. But knowing that the finish line was literally 4 weeks to the day away from when things went down, that was tough because that's like it's not like I went out there going, you know what, I got 4 weeks left in my career. I think I'm going to screw it all up, you know, ruin my reputation. I'm going to say something stupid and create a shit show. No, that was the last thing that I wanted to do. I wanted to sail off into the sunset, haven't finished my career off. You know what it's like when a referee works his last game and the players on both teams come shake up hands, to you and shake hands. Yeah. And, you know, I was looking forward to that. I miss that. That's my regret, that the number one regret is my kids didn't get to see it and that I didn't get that send off that I thought I deserved. You know, I'd been a good ref for a long time, and sure, did I make some calls over the years that fans didn't like? Of course I did, but I always tried to be a consistent and a hardworking ref out there. And that was the last thing that's not how I wanted my career to end.
Did you ever personally hear from Gary Bettman or Bill Daly?
Not Gary, but I talked to Bill a couple times since then, and Bill, you know, I thanked him for everything. People are like, you thanked him? And I'm like, yeah, because everything I had was because of the National Hockey League. And like I said earlier, they're not to blame. You know, I'm the one that said it, and Bill and I talked a couple times in the last 6 weeks, and he's like, if you ever need anything, if you ever need a recommendation for any jobs you're going for, he says, you represented the league great for 23 years. And not one incident isn't going to take away from that. So, and then I've talked to Stephen Walkham a couple times since then, and the guys on our staff, I've talked to them a lot, you know, and they've come over to the house and seen me, guys that I worked with, and when they've been in town reffing games. And so, hey, life moves on.
Yeah, it does,
man. Like,
so you seem like you're in a great spot. Honestly, I felt like, and you never know, right? But I felt like you were able to move on from it rather quickly. Am I right about that?
Yeah, I was. Like, it's funny because Joel Quenville, he calls me, and on the day that it happened, actually, I was at the horse barn with Brielle, and he's like, I know it sucks right now. And Joel, you know Q, like, Q's the best.
Yeah.
He's the best. And he goes, but you're going to survive. And he goes, you know, it was funny. He said this, and Jeremy Roenick said the same thing. They said, you'll be surprised, but actually this may create more opportunities coming, you know, for you down the road. Yeah, right. If I had to just retired as a NHL ref, you know, some people would know me. Like Joel said, he goes, like it or not, he says, people know you now.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not bragging that I'm not happy it happened, but you've got to look at, hey, things happen for a reason, and maybe it will create more opportunities. And so,
yeah. What are you most proud of your career? That was a long time.
Besides my goal that you hooked me up with.
Well, I mean, because listen, I think you officiated like over 1,300 NHL games, something like that, right?
Yep. 1,362. Yeah.
It's a lot, man.
Yeah, and would have been 50.
What's the average for a referee? I mean,
1,000. And it, you know, and
what do you get for 1,000 games as a ref? They give you like a silver.
Like a watch.
Silver whistle.
Like a fist pump.
And I would have worked 1,500 if it wasn't, you know, we had two work stoppages and, you know, it's easy to say, like I worked the bronze medal game between the USA and Finland in Sochi, Russia. And it would be easy to say that was my highlight, but I think what I'm most proud of is there's a lot of guys that ref in this league that they have a good year. So they work playoffs and the next year they have a so-so year and somebody else takes their spot. So they're in, they're out. They work playoffs for 2 or 3 years and they miss a year. I never missed a year. Other than my first year in the league, I worked playoffs every year. So I was always, you know, and I liked when the players would do a players poll. They usually had me around like 3 or 4.
Really?
They always had Wes at number one and Sudsy at number two. And then it was O'Halloran, myself, and whoever. And so I like that the players thought that I was a good ref. Mm-hmm. You want to be respected. Yeah. Like I didn't care if I was really liked. I just, because you can't be a good referee in the league if you want to be liked all the time. You just can't because you've got to be a prick sometimes, you know. And, but I always liked the fact that they respected me and they thought that I was one of the top refs. So, so working the playoffs every year, that's what I'm most proud of.
Yeah.
Who didn't you like? This is the last one for me. I know you've been here for
like
a
player.
Time. Yeah, there's wait. There's got to be a guy that you're like this dude.
There was.
I mean,
there was only one guy. Tyler Wright.
Tyler Wright.
I know.
Columbus,
I know.
Right?
Columbus.
Tyler Wright.
Columbus. I know. You probably don't even remember him.
I don't know.
He was a little bit before you. He was like late 90s, early 2000s.
So he wasn't
right?
like a big dog or anything.
No.
He played a little bit, though.
No. But to be mouthy, right?
But he just, was just, he did not, he just, we just didn't like each other. We were just, I don't know. I'm sure he's a great guy. I think he works for the Oilers now or does something up there.
Does something, yeah.
But him and I just didn't like each other. But I tried to get along with all the players. And it's funny because early in my career, because I was trying to make it as a ref, like I'm working because we went to the two referee system. So I'm working with Frazier and Kolarski and all the Mick Magoo and all these guys that had big personalities. They had big names. So I felt like I had to make a name for myself. So I came into the league, and I'm not embarrassed to say it, but I was cocky. I was arrogant. I was like, thought I had to be, you know, make a name for myself. And I said this to my boss, Wacom, years ago. I said, I wish I had been more like the Tim Peel the last 10 years than I was the first 13 years of my career. Because the Tim Peel the last 10 years was – you've got to be confident on the ice, but not arrogant and approachable. Let things, you know, if someone said something to me early in my career, I'd get my back up. Where the last few years I'd be like, hey dude, like, you know, let's get along. Like we're all in this together.
Well, you mature, man. I mean,
you know, it's just life, right? And you just learn over the years and it made me a better ref, you know?
Yeah. Well, and the last one for me, like, listen, and we've known you for so long, man. Mm-hmm. You're one of the best people we know, honestly, man. You had a great career. You know that.
Well,
and like, and
he says that to everybody that we
know. No, you know that. And I genuinely I think people felt bad, but then like, seeing how you took it, like, I think for me, like, and for, I'm sure for other people, like, oh, fuck, if he's okay, like, I'm not going to sit there and be like, I'm so sorry, because it seemed like you were in a good spot. But what would your message be to people who have been through difficult circumstances in their profession or referees who are trying to, like, find their way and whatever, and they're getting criticized and what, like, people who deal with real adversity in life?
Yeah.
Like, how'd you get through it?
Yeah, I think, you know, that's not an easy question to answer because I think it's not something that all of a sudden you just figure out when something like that happens. It's something that you develop over time through your childhood and your whole life. Like nothing, you know, I didn't finish college and I worked at a big bank. Like I always wanted more, and I knew the only way I was going to get more was by working hard and never letting people tell me. Like, I remember when I wanted to ref in the NHL, there was a guy by the name of Will Norris. He was a longtime ref, and he worked in the office. And he told me at the time, he goes, "You're too small." Because this was back in the late 90s when, you know, you had, you know, I used this analogy the other day, the Legion of Doom line. Like, the players were big back then. Yeah. They weren't hiring linesmen unless you were 6 foot.
Oh, I know.
Because we had fights, and they didn't want to hire small refs because they maybe didn't have the presence on the ice that the bigger refs had, like a Koharski or something.
Interesting, yeah.
And, you know, he's like, "You'll never make it to the NHL." And I just... Anytime anybody ever told me that, you know, you're not good enough or you're not going to make it, I never said, "Well, screw them, I'm going to do it." I just kind of put it inside me and go, "You know what? I'm just going to keep working hard. Yeah. I'm just going to keep working hard." And I say this all the time, and it sounds like a line, but it's so true. And it's like you guys, you know, you guys started out and probably, you know, "Are we going to make it?" And look where you guys are now. But it's like anything in life. If you work hard, generally good things are going to happen. If you work hard, 90% of the time something good's going to come out of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes it doesn't. But if you keep working hard, usually something good's going to come out of it. Yeah. So that's the kind of the life lesson I try to... And going back to my kids, you know, Tisha said to me once, she goes... It was about 2 weeks into it. She goes, "How come you're like..." She goes, you've like haven't had a bad day. I go... "Babe," I go, "you know my life, like my life story and what I came from and all that." I go, "But," I said, I got an example to set for Bronson and Brielle. They're 9-7. I go, and I said this at my ref camp, and I told the story because it was funny. So at my ref school here in St. Louis, I didn't want to open up with my story the first night. Cam came 2 years ago and pumped the kids up, and this year Joey Vitale came in, and it was awesome. And so I didn't want to start the camp off because they all knew. They're all referees, right? We had 40 kids and at the camp, and obviously they knew what happened. But I didn't want to start the camp off with my story because I wanted it to be upbeat and you know. So the second day into the camp, one of the students gave me a little shot in a way. We were talking about something. And so finally I looked at the whole room and I go, "Do you guys want to hear the story?" And they're like, yeah, we want to hear the story. So I told them the whole story. And I told them about resiliency and perseverance. And I said to them, I said, "These kids are 14 to 24. I go, life's pretty good right now. Probably in high school, you got a car. Mom and dad bought you a car. You got a girlfriend. I go, life's pretty good. But I go, you're going to get kicked in the nuts. I go, there's going to be times throughout your life that things are going to suck. But it's how you deal with it. And it gives me chills because this mom came up to me a couple days into the camp and she goes, "I wish your camp was a week long." And I go, "Why?" And she goes, because "My son just loves you." And she goes, "The life lessons you're teaching my kids," she goes, "he just comes home and just talks about it." And I'm like, yeah, that's what life's all about. Mm-hmm. You know what is like I talked about earlier is being nice to people and learning from your mistakes. And it sounds so corny, but you know what? Good things are going to come out of this. So I said to Tisha, I go, "I got an example to set for my kids." And I said, "I'm excited about the fall. I'm excited about new opportunities and new ventures and being home with you guys and being around you guys."
And like, staying in shape.
Like I was like the, you know, all my buddies are like, "Well, we see you in the summertime," because the winter would roll around and I'd be home for 2 or 3 days. And I didn't want to go out and see my friends because I want to spend time with my family. So I'm like, I'm so excited to be home now. And you know what? It was time to go. It was time to go. Yeah. I'm 55.
It is with everything.
Well, you had a great run.
We all
went
through it.
Yeah.
You had a great run.
Thanks.
Great run,
I appreciate it, boys.
Now, pop up what you're doing now so people know. Yeah.
So Daily Faceoff, Frank Saravelli, he's with Daily Faceoff. They've brought me on as the rules analyst, and we start this Friday. We did a session a couple weeks ago that's on YouTube, but he brought on Mike McKenna, Kevin Weeks, Scott Burnside. He just brought on Bryce Salvador a couple days ago and myself. So we've got a good little team going there, and we start this Friday, and people can call in and or email and ask questions and, you know, I was on Facebook last night, and it's funny how many people just want to, they want to pick your brain and ask you about rules and so on. So I'm excited about that. It's going to be fun.
That'll be awesome, man. Something new, beautiful, different. Yeah,
well, good luck with all that.
Thanks, boys.
All right. Great to see you as always.
Yeah, good to see you guys too.
Yeah, appreciate you coming in here.
Thanks you. Thanks
you. Lovely place in.
You guys have a great setup here.
Hey, it's pretty nice. You know, that's why we don't do the videos. Leave it to the imagination. To the
my ass is the only guy. I go, I look like shit, man. I don't want that camera.
I can't put
camera.
No, you guys are. You know, other than my one interview that I did with Frank, and that's because you know, they gave me a job. You know, all these. It's funny. It's like all these podcasts. They want to hear your story.
Yeah. It's everybody's crazy. Got one. Don't they?
Everyone's got one. And people that have reached out, but I love you guys. You guys were good to me during tough times that I went through, and I appreciate it. And I wish you guys but success.
Yeah, appreciate that.
You're the best, Pilsy.
Yeah, dude.
Thanks, boys.
Thanks for coming by, man.
Sounds good.
Hey, what's up, everybody? That interview was brought to you by Daredevil Hockey and daredevilhockey.com. Use that promo code today, Cam and Strick. It's going to save you 25%. All caps, Cam and Strick, Daredevil Hockey. Get yourself protected today. All right, that was Timmy Peel here on the Cam and Strick podcast presented by Hair Club, man. Your takeaway is what?
Oh, well, it's just nice to have him live, man. And he wanted to let it out, too. And I'm glad he's over it. And I've been through fucking hell and back with all kinds of different things. And sometimes when the whole world hates you, you just got to sit back and remember it all blows over. If you're a good, overall good person, karma always kind of comes back in your favor.
Yeah.
Sometimes you got to get knocked the fuck down because you did something stupid. Yeah. I certainly know about that. But it always blows over, and it certainly happened with him. And he's doing good, man. He's getting hired. He's probably got money in the bank. His kids are fucking – actually, it looks like he's fucking got a – his kids are fucking on stallions cruising around and horses and shit. So he's doing all right. But his mind's right, dude. You could tell he's happy. And he did cry. Yeah. Now, he did cry. He was emotional. You know, he's an emotional dude. And he got fucking...
Well, wouldn't you?
He got... Damn right. He got teary-eyed, man. Because that's a... I'm telling you, when the whole world is against you.
Yeah.
And yeah, he's getting those phone calls from people. But they're not... That doesn't add up. It doesn't add up yet. You see all the shit. They fucking hate you. It's like you killed somebody or something. And then all of a sudden, like, it just, you just got to be strong, and it blows over. And if you're a good dude, man, it all comes back around.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt. You can always rely on your family and friends to be there for you too, though, man.
Yeah,
you know,
that's true.
If you have that good infrastructure, it can help you get over it, even though it's not easy. And listen, I can't imagine, like, 99.9% of the people listening to this have never been in that situation where when you make a mistake, all of a sudden, it's out there for the entire world to see.
No, I know. You know? So, like, when he walked
in... And people who already don't like you, then they use this as, like, hey, they can just use this against you and whatever. And you know what, man? I thought... He handled it probably as well as you possibly could have. Talking to him, not only the night that it happened, but shortly thereafter, man. I mean, honestly, he's got a great head on his shoulder, very confident in terms of the career that he had. One mistake does not take away from your entire career.
A 2.5 second mistake.
And to last in the National Hockey League and officiate over 1,300 games, 23 years, man, that is a hell of a career.
Just remember, and when he said the story, walking into Chesterfield where he knows all the, he's going to coach that first time coming back.
Yeah.
You just.
Well, because it's a rink, man. Everybody knows, right?
Listen, you just remember all those motherfuckers got their own problems.
That's right.
Every motherfucker. Just,
they're not
does.
In the public eye,
they're
though.
Just not in the public eye. And they still look up to you, man. If you're a good dude to them and you act like you're a normal person and you're a professional athlete or something that's just different and unique. Like, these people still, like, you think the worst that they're going to think of you, but it's not the case if you're a good person.
Yeah.
They all got their fuck-ups, man,
and
they know it. And so just sometimes you got to balance yourself out, balance your mind out. Like, I'll take a little bit.
Let me ask you that. I'm going to put you on the spot. You think the league needed to take it that far? Couldn't they have, like, suspended him for a couple of years? Do they need to, like, end it right then and there?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. It was too staunch not to, right? Like, it was too much.
I mean, they reacted right away, not even, like, 12 hours later.
When he told the story where he's in the locker room and his phone's blowing up and all of a sudden it's your boss and he's like, we got a problem. I know that feeling where your heart sinks into your soul and you're just like, and you can't breathe. And you're like, and you got to be real and normal to people and you got to travel and all you're doing is thinking about it. You can't even call your fucking wife. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah, man. That was tough.
And when you have kids, that even makes it more emotional. I mean, he tells a story about his daughter, but you know what? His kids will know And they're going to talk to enough people to know that Timmy Peel had a great career, yeah, and he was a great referee, man.
Absolutely.
And had a great career, like I said.
And
so.
that's a good talking point for your kids to know, like, Daddy fucked up. Although you couldn't say that, right? Daddy messed up. Like, this is... It's a learning curve for
you
him.
You think we need these mics in hockey for referees? Does it really add to it that much? I mean, like I said in the interview, some are better than others, but it can be real cringeworthy when you have an official who just cannot spit it out.
I don't mind it.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. What do I care? What do I care if it's more cringeworthy for them?
Yeah.
Everything's cringeworthy. What if you had a break when you toe pick? That's cringeworthy. Or fucking get hit from behind. I don't know. Fuck that. I want to hear what the fuck you got to say. Mm. Now, I don't think that they should do reporting afterwards. Remember, we asked them that question. Like, you need to answer. Nah, that's too much.
Did you ever have your ears pierced?
Yeah.
Both ears or just one?
I did them both for a little bit.
Oh, you did?
When I was a skateboarder. That was my weird time with James and Chaz.
Really?
That was my weird time
Austin
with James
Matthews,
and Chaz.
Austin Matthews, he has both ears done fucking, now.
I saw it.
Well,
so Michael Jordan did too.
No, Jordan only had one.
Oh, the left one, eh?
Left one. I had the left one.
I thought you had the right one.
No, the left
one.
You can't even say that.
Why? What are you trying to say? I didn't say anything.
I had the left one.
I saw pictures you had it in the right ear.
No, I haven't worn it in forever.
Well, it was in high school pictures you had it in the right ear, and I was that's cool.
No, left ear. But
not that it matters.
I did it myself.
So did I.
With a buddy of mine.
Just a stupid thing to do.
Ice cube, and then you put a pin through it.
Yep, and you put alcohol in it, and mine, it got fucking infected.
Mine got infected too.
Infected. Stupid.
And where he did it, my boy Nick, like he put it way too low in the air, in the ear.
And
he
put it in the right ear.
Oh, no, he put it in the left ear. But it wasn't in the right area where it was supposed to be. You know, so it's like way too low.
Oh,
and
you must have looked so tough.
And I didn't wear it very long, whatever, but this was like junior high.
Yeah, I did mine like 8th, 9th grade. I was like the confusing part of my
year. Yeah, everybody else was doing it, whatever, so I just, you know.
That was my confusing years.
Were you confused?
I was confused.
You didn't know who you were?
I didn't know who I was. Nope, not at all. You can take that as far as you want. I don't give a fuck. I was like, what am I, you know? And my dad had to give me that fucking talk. Yeah. Like, you're hanging out with the fucking dipshit, motherfucker. Yeah. Okay.
He had to let you know.
Yeah, let me know. Like, what are these guys doing? They don't even have fucking girls around here. I'm like, oh, God, you're right. So. I know. Get back and I quit hockey. Yeah. Remember? Oh, all right. Anyway, that's enough for now. We got to go. I got to go.
Well, I hope people enjoyed this interview, man. Yeah, again, give us that 5-star like. Give us that review.
Please. Follow us everywhere.
Follow us everywhere. Instagram, Twitter.
Support the sponsors, guys.
Go to our website at camandstrick.com. You can find any episode. If you missed any previous episodes, go back to listen to something. Like, look at the list we had of people we've interviewed. Yep. And just find one you like, man. And you're going to love the interview for sure. And again, follow us Instagram, Twitter, at camandstrick on Instagram and Twitter. And follow our own personal pages, too, on Instagram and Twitter as well. So, anyway, the Cam and Strick podcast brought to you by Hair Club. Again, over 1,200 locations, over hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of solutions for whatever your hair needs are. Go talk to a consultant and let them help you through it in terms of what you need, what the best program, what the best protocol is for you individual. It's like having a personal trainer for your hair.
I know. It's quite lovely. Yeah. And they're all very sweet, too. And it's just like a comfortable experience.
Very
the hardest
good
thing is walking in the door. Yes. And once you do it, it's like, fuck everything. Let's go, baby.
All right. We love our friends over there at Hair Club. HairClub.com. Again, 12 locations in North America. No matter where you are right now, you can probably reach out the window right now and be close to a Hair Club facility. CarShield.com, 800-857-2481. Use that promo code CAM. It's going to save you 10%. I know it's hard. I know it's a little embarrassing, but use it anyway because it's going to save you money. You never know when something's going to go down. Your car, engine, whatever, computer goes down. We're talking thousands and thousands of dollars, but not if you have that protection from CarShield and CarShield.com. Again, 800-857-2481. Bellman and Bellman.com. Again, they want to buy your used car. Go there. Everybody qualifies. Everybody qualifies. No matter how bad your credit is, whatever the situation is, everyone qualifies.
That's nice to know.
Yes, it is, Cam. Even you qualify.
Thank you.
Even you qualify. So you can look at one of their new cars for sure, but why don't you consider a brand new vehicle of one of Bellman's top quality pre-owned vehicles as well. Plus, they want to buy your used car. If you have it sitting there, you're like, I don't know, who would want this? Listen, they want it. They will buy it today. Their credit specialists will treat you like family. Customize a finance plan to get you into the perfect vehicle for your needs and budget. So again, Bellman, Bellman.com. Daredevil Hockey, daredevilhockey.com. Use that promo code Cam and Strick, all caps. It's going to save you a bunch of money. Get that protection. Don't be dealing with these skate lacerations, especially for kids, youth hockey players, adult hockey players. Local legend, all our sponsors, of course, my bookie, gamble with us all season long. We got a lot of fun stuff. You can check that out. Brody's going to be putting some stuff up on Instagram and Twitter. You'll use our promo code. Check out that lock of the week. The lock of the year.
Lock of the year, baby.
Vegas or Seattle? Who are you going with again? I'm going with Vegas.
Lock of the year for the first game?
Yeah, first game.
Vegas. Well, it depends on the line. Like, you know, I don't know.
But maybe whoever scores first and stuff like that. I don't know. I'll do all different things.
We're going to do, yeah. They know what to do.
Yeah, so check that out. MyBookie, MyBookie.com. We'll have fun with that for sure. And give us your suggestions. If you're really into gambling, whatever, you can feel free to reach out to us.
Damn right.
Our DMs are always open, so be sure to check that out. My custom sports chair. Again, be a local legend. The promo code is Strick. I want to throw that in there. Strick, it'll save you money. My custom sports chair, Cam and Strick 20, is going to save you a bunch of money, free shipping, and save you 20% as well on all of your orders. Pick it out. Customize your sports chair for you today. All right, this has been the Cam and Strick podcast presented by Hair Club, episode number 155, man. We appreciate everybody for tuning in, and especially Timmy Peel for coming by and telling his story with us live today. That was awesome.
Right on, baby.